You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined this week by Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, Nicole Hale. It's the end of 2012.
We survived the apocalypse.
Woo-hoo! Hey. So it is Fanboy Versus, the year that is 2012, as we will be giving our big 2012 picks, our best of choices, the things that we individually think are the best, even though others on the show may ridicule things that we say and love. Anyway, so... but before we get to that, we are going to be giving our review and thoughts on Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 700, the last issue of Amazing Spider-Man.
No fight mention.
It can't. And with that being said as well, it's going to be spoilerific. In fact, this whole podcast is basically spoilerific because some of our best picks can't be talked about without spoiling things. So if you haven't read 698, 699, and 700... Why? First of all. But second of all, you're definitely going to get spoiled on it. So you may want to skip a little bit if you want to get to the best of picks. Or actually, you should stop what the hell you're doing right now and go read them. If your shop is open, go buy them. If they're not available, get them on Comixology. And then go buy the hard copies because you're going to want to have those. So,
oh, yeah.
Well, frankly, if you've made it up till now without learning what happens in the comic, you're doing pretty well.
You know, I guess
to see so many websites, CNN, Fox News covering stories. I was like, really?
It's a pretty
imagine big... like what the press room is like for that. Yeah. Where you have all these guys who just copy the press releases out. Someone somewhere, there's got to be at least more than one journalist on a website somewhere going, I could have sworn we ran the story about the death of Peter Parker last year.
Yeah, it seems...
Never mind.
It seems like this happened.
Yeah, this happened once already.
No, in fact, I think my favorite, though, which would have been a spoiler tweet if you hadn't read, was, of course, Stan Lee's birthday was this past week. He's 90 now, I believe.
90?
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Stan.
It is so also happy birthday to the man, Stan Lee. But he tweeted, I think, something to Dan Slott that, like, so for my birthday, you killed Spider-Man. Thanks a lot. Appreciate that.
Says that you like really appreciate a guy when you kill his most prized creation.
But the follow up was the best because Slott like tweeted back. He's like, "That's so great. I'm gonna print that out and put that on my fridge." Without missing a beat, Stan Lee tweets back and's like, "Oh well, that'll probably be the best piece of writing in your home."
Oh,
oh man.
Like, but it's all in fun.
Oh, yeah, it was total love, but it was great.
No word has ever escaped Stan Lee's lips. of course, like, the number of miserable, mean-spirited punters on the internet who have interpreted as Stan Lee being a bitch are beyond numbering.
Yeah, that's just...
that.
It's just totally a jab, but it was great. I mean, it was hilarious. But he tweeted back after that. He was like, no, man, all the love. You're great, so...
I know Stan Lee is like... It's when he does stuff, like, you do remember... why Stan Lee is who he is and why he is as great and sharp. And it's great that he's still as great and as sharp and as quick he ever was when he's able to just bust out the Barnum and Bailey bandstanding, self-deprecating, just insult comedy like that. Yeah. Don't you just love Stan Lee?
I do. Oh, he's great. Just great. So, definitely, happy birthday. 90. Man. I'm not even going to make it to 60, and he's 90. That's awesome. But anyway. So just like I said, spoilers galore, so just be aware. So one thing we do want to mention is that we don't have, I guess, a ton of details. But Peter David has had a stroke, I guess we're saying they're thinking stroke at this point.
The news just seems to have just broken. He was on holiday in Florida over the the festive period. And he's had a stroke, which is terrible. Yeah. He has posted an update online himself. It's written in the first person anyway. So he does not seem to have been completely incapacitated by it, but he seems to have lost control of the right side of his body, and we're just waiting for some updates now. So all the best, frankly. Yeah. Get well soon, except.
Absolutely. So
that'd be terrible, Peter David is one of the great juggernauts of comics, who is still one of those guys who made his name with a run 20 some years ago, but who is still consistently producing new work today. It's a small people who are still putting work out consistently for the big two who began their work in that era. And we were talking last week about creators who bring fans with them to new projects that they start, and Peter David's absolutely an example of a dedicated
fan. He's one of my favorite writers. I loved his Captain Marvel, and I collected his Incredible Hulk for a long time because he was on that book forever. So, I hate to hear this.
Yeah.
So, all the best to him, and hopefully a speedy recovery.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there may be other news things. We're not going to talk about them because we've got too much to do. And, frankly, we'll just talk about it next year because whatever. So let's, without further ado, let's move on then. So we're going to first talk about 700, and then we'll talk about our picks. So 700.
700 of what, JD?
700 Amazing Spider-Man. That's it.
Dying Wish Suicide Run.
Yeah.
God,
I mean,
what a title.
It's funny because that last issue, at the very end of it, you're all prepped, You're like, this is going to be it. This is the gauntlet run. This is the action movie last sequence. And it is kind of that, I think, in a lot of ways. And takes a few, twists and turns. Of course, we knew from last time that Doc Ock, who's, as we know, Peter, in his body, has broken out. One of the first high points in here is that Doc Ock has a brilliant plan initially, which is run. his first idea is to get out of town. And
it's not just get out of town. It's like he was going to be in the air for like 15 hours.
Yeah. And he was just going to turn around and come back. Like, you're really going to do that? He's like, yeah, whatever. But early on in trying to hook Doc up, Peter up as Doc. I love the interaction with him and Trapster in this as well as it goes through the entirety of this, where he's like, no, carry the eight, you imbecile. You just imagine Peter like, okay, what would Doc say? It's great. Anyway. We get an early death sequence in this, and the only thing I want to point out from it is that, it took me a couple of times through to really realize what was happening. His clothes change depending on who he's talking to.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
But it's a really nice touch, especially when he's talking to his father and it turns into like his Horizon lab coat and stuff. That's kind of nifty.
Well, he basically moves up through the kind of classic eras of Peter, nerdy 60s, then he's this college age. Then he's just the adult, and then he's who he is now, and then he's Spider-Man.
Yeah, which is great. This conversation he has with Uncle Ben, but
it's a great you've been knocked down a couple of times. Get back in the ring, son. Type of conversation.
Yeah. But the rest of this is basically two plans working themselves out. Peter's plan is to try to get to an Octobot. Like the ones that were used to switch them in order to switch them back. Ock's plan, however, is to gather all of Peter's friends into one place and to sort of just use them, I would guess, as a pawn or a trick, to say, look, they're all here. I could do something terrible to them or unleash, these guys that are supposedly helping you on them. Or you could just die, just die, and that would be a lot easier. Which everything sort of culminates in this battle in Avengers Tower. And, the big thing is he's got Scorpion here, and Gorgon figures out, basically Ock tells him as Spider-Man that Jameson is there, which just sends him on a rampage, because, of course, that becomes an overriding element for him. and it leads up to like the final, what I would call the final thrust of this, where Ock is running around as Spider-Man, and he's trying to stop Scorpion, and he punches him. You know, like Doc Ock would punch somebody.
He doesn't just punch him, he knocks his jaw.
Well, and he basically makes half his head explode. And it was like this epiphany moment for Doc Ock, because he realizes that Peter held back. All of those times that Spider-Man had punched him or hit him, you know, he was pulling those punches so that he wouldn't.
It was like a real Superman type moment, you know, like.
Yes.
Like the whole, you know, Superman, you know, he obviously has to hold back or he's going to kill anybody he touches.
Yeah.
To find that Spider-Man is basically doing the same thing, it's kind of, that's pretty awesome.
It's awesome for us as the reader, but I think it was really, I think it started down the end of this road for Ock, because I think he realized it was his first moment of realization that, you know, maybe really who Peter was, you know, what he was really up against. That even though he had beaten him, that there were some elements that he wasn't aware of. And although we do see this sort of fall from grace from Peter here, because, you know, Peter's in this desperate moment where his body is dying. He's really trying to get switched back with Doc Ock, or at least stop Spider-Man from, you know, doing any more harm. Of which Spider-Man, of course, does, because he uses his impact webbing. And wounds, as best as we can tell, Max, Glory, and MJ. Mm-hmm. And so in the sort of last bit of desperation, you know, Peter does the absolute unthinkable, which is that he basically, his last hope is to kill himself and Spider-Man in one swoop by jumping out the window. And, you know, of course, he thinks that's going to be enough, which it's not, because Doc Ock is smart. He uses the webbing to create a airbag cushion that they land on, something that Peter wouldn't have thought of, you know, and makes that comment. And then we have this final moment where we really think, okay, this is going to be it. This is going to be the moment where everything gets fixed. Because the Octobot crawls up on, you know, Spider-Man's back and goes to hit him in the neck. And Doc Ock had that shielded. So, no switchback for Peter. And it basically, you know, Peter goes, he's like, well, that was it. That was my last chance. And, you know, he's going to try something else, but he's just so tired that he can't. And he starts to... Well, his life starts to flash before his eyes, but the Octobot created enough of a neural connection that they were able to, that basically Ock experienced, in a brilliant piece of art, I think, Ock experiences Peter's entire life as though he experienced it. You know, basically living all of those moments, you know, very rapidly. But, you know, you see Doc Ock getting bit by the spider, with his aunt and uncle, you know, letting the thief go, stopping him later, hearing that his uncle was dead. You know, it's just all of these brilliant moments for the next, like, page or two where you see all of these things and it's like his eyes are opened and he sees, you know, why Peter is who he is and why he does what he does. And in this sort of odd moment, and yet in touching in the same way, you know, Doc Ock says he's gonna, you know, be Spider-Man, but, you know, try to be a hero and be better than Peter was as Spider-Man. And, you know, Peter basically tells him, like, yeah, you know, you're gonna have to be, because you're gonna have to be Spider-Man now. And then he dies.
Holy crap!
And then he dies! Yeah! Yeah, and, you know, and Doc Ock's going to be a superior Spider-Man. Could you believe it? Like, I mean, what was your... Give me just, like, some of your takes. Like, what was your feeling, like, when you got to that last page and you realized this was really going to be it, that Peter's dead and Doc Ock's going to be Spider-Man?
Well, to be honest, I think my mind had already raced ahead to the conclusion that, once maybe got to about halfway through the story when no other scenario was... Because you guys remember that I thought I wasn't sold on the idea that Otto was definitely going to be the superior Spider-Man.
Oh, no, we remember that very well, yes, sir.
After we got the reveal in part one, I figured there would be another twist in it. But once we got about halfway through this and no other scenario had presented itself, I took it as read that that was where we were headed with this, so... It was really the final scenes of the thing that sold the idea to me.
Yeah, because like when we were kind of deciding like who is the Superior Spider-Man, and I was thinking, yeah, I mean just the name itself says, oh, it's got to be Doc Ock,
right?
And I was thinking, okay, so how are they going to do this? He's a villain. Is it going to be a book about a villain? And then you get to the end. And it all comes together. It's not about a book about a villain. It's a book about a villain that now has this new perspective.
Yeah.
You know, it's an understanding. I mean, because, like, those last pages, like you said, I mean, they work so well. Like, how they're basically finishing each other's sentences. You know, like, him saying, you know, how could you even do all this? How do we do this? And he's like, because you have to. You know,
right.
Because you're not just getting Spider-Man's body. You know, you're getting everything. You're getting... you know, the responsibility, basically.
Right.
And it's such a different... It's not at all what I was expecting. It's in a totally different direction. I mean, because is he going to be a hero? Is he going to be a villain? I mean, he could literally go either direction now. We can't predict what's going to happen in Superior Spider-Man number one.
No.
See, for my money, I have never been a fan of the brain swap as a plot, because... I grew up in the 80s, and every single children's cartoon in the 80s had one episode where the goody traded minds with the baddie, except Transformers, maybe. an awful lot of shows did that, and it always wound up going the same way. But this is that story actually explored in a non... You know, and then you get movies like Freaky Friday or whatever, where it's done like for comedic purposes, and it's done in an hour and a half. This is that as a long-term exploration of another person actually trying to live someone else's life and live up to their ideal. And they're not doing it to conquer the world by pretending to be them and to get the codes for the nuclear missiles or whatever. Yeah. This is an actual mature exploration of that plot idea as a long-term plot. Well, I say long term. We'll see how long it lasts. Because, you know, okay, right, you know, hands up, right, let's kick the... Like, nobody believes this is forever except idiots, okay?
No, I mean, I think, you know, Brian's take on it I thought was perfect, which is that, you know, this will probably go a year, 2 years, and then, you know, something will happen and we'll get a, you know, Reed Richards-designed magic pill to, you know... reemerge Peter's consciousness or something, you know.
Yeah, because it's not like all of Peter's memories are in there.
Yeah.
Let's not pretend that Slott doesn't have the answer to this already written in his head.
Right.
You know, Brian was talking about it, and like another one of his ideas is just like, he just gets hit in the head and then he like wakes up. He's Peter Parker again.
Yeah. How weird would it... How weird would... Okay, so it's Spider-Man's body with Doc Ock in it thinking he's Peter Parker.
Yeah.
That would be... Is that kind of like the Aunt May actor thinking she's actually Aunt May?
That's maybe more like Armin Tamzarian and Principal Skinner. No one shall mention it again on penalty of death.
So what did you think, Nicole, though, of this?
Because I'm recently new to reading Spider-Man, as you all know. It's only been like maybe a year since I've actually been getting this series. I love it when a bad guy goes good for the right reasons. You know? Mm-hmm. And I, like I said, I wasn't surprised at the ending. I'm surprised how they made to get to the ending. I really liked how they did it. I thought it was very well done. Like you said, the flashbacks series, the scenes of when Doc Ock is in Peter's memories. I loved that. That was great. But it's really weird knowing that Peter Parker's not going to be in any of the Spider series. That's what's tripping me. Like, Peter's not out there.
Yeah, and Doc Ock's not been very good about the comedic quips.
Yeah, and, see, that's...
There's even been some comments, like, even I think it's in this issue where it's like, who says, what did he say? Like, he made
lip,
a
give you lip or
yeah,
yeah, that was pretty funny.
He keeps referring, he keeps calling MJ woman.
Yeah. And I'm like, he's like, you knew I was Spider-Man for years. Explain yourself, woman.
I like the reference back to Aunt May again. He does have feelings for her. So I'm kind of interested. It'll be interesting to see, like, in Superior Spider-Man, where that relationship goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dawdling. That's the word. It's like, who says dawdling?
Feelings. I just read it as she's a nice woman and he has nothing against her.
Yeah. He appreciates Aunt May, so I'm just wondering how he's going to handle that situation now. So I'm excited to see that part. Yeah, I thought it was.
And I want to just kind of backtrack. If we can, I want to just backtrack on something before we leave it. The big plot thread that's been dangling, which we knew was coming, shows up. Mary Jane, of course, admits to Spider-Man that she still loves him.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not Peter Parker. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that right? Isn't that just the jab? Like,
It's that Parker look. Oh, my God.
Because
Mephisto thinks about all this.
Do what?
I said, I wonder what Mephisto thinks about all this.
He's
like, well, I guess I'll allow it. It's not technically, I think the devil would probably appreciate somebody working within the letter of an agreement rather than the spirit.
Dawdling. I love that. I have to secure a location. We must hurry now. No dawdling. Dawdling? Who says dawdling?
It's dawdling.
Yeah.
Do you know what the thing that goes on through all of this issue that I particularly love is? And it's something that's been ever-present in Slott's Spider-Man, but which I think stood out the most in the Massacre two-parter, but it's one of Spider-Man's greatest qualities, and Slott has really been able to bring it out in the best way, is the sheer doggedness of Spider-Man to stand up against any threat that there is.
Yeah.
He will always keep coming back, and this is a story of when two equally dogged, dedicated people who have nothing and everything left to lose collide in such a way. It's like Peter is constantly being stopped at every turn in this story, and then whatever Ox come up with, Peter counters it with something else. Like, I still think one of the best Spider moments from Slott is that second part of Matters of Life and Death, where Massacre has all of his gadgets and bombs and tools, and is like, well, I'll do this. And Spider's like, no, you won't. Well, yeah, well, what if I did this? No, I got that one covered. Well, I could also do this. Yeah. Like, no, you're fine.
Yep.
It's like every single thing he comes out with, Peter has got something to stop it. And it's the same, we see the same unfold here. It's just that, unfortunately, Ock is as smart as he is, and is as good at that as he is, and when it's like every time push him out a window, impact webbing, attracted to Avengers Tower. No, we were always supposed to be here. Totally, he was here already, round and round and round. And you think, oh, he's finally got the Octobot, and it's like, no, sorry, I got there first. And I when he had the shielding on the head, I was like, oh, yeah.
Well, and
that was like, oh God.
I think there's a saying within sports. I'm trying to remember who said it, which is that we didn't lose, we just ran out of time. And I think that this is like the epitome of that. It's like, it's not so much that Peter lost to Doc Ock, it's just that he ran out of time, And it's like, I think if he would have, a little bit more time, and Peter could have figured something out, but this is one of those times when he was up against the ultimate clock. Mm. And, he couldn't buy himself any more time than he already had. So,
but then it is that absolute dedication to the right thing and that sheer determination and doggedness that Ock then experiences. I mean, this is now like up against that for best scene in Slott Spidey.
Oh,
where
Ock
sees all of the, he sees nothing good. Spider-Man has had plenty of wonderful moments in his life, but he does not see anything good here. He sees all the terrible struggles and the intense emotion and power and dedication and suffering that Spider-Man has had to go through and that he has gone through willingly and realizes would do again here. And this is transformative, And we don't want to linger on all of the insane negative people that live on the internet, because there's been a lot of backlash against this. I can't really understand why, but just to sweep that to the side. There you'll find a lot of bitter, twisted people who say really dumb things, like how this story, getting rid of Peter and replacing him with Doc, is a slap in the face to the character, or a disservice to the character, or an insult, or blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what story are you reading? This story is an absolute validation of everything that Spider-Man has ever done or believed as a character. The mantra that great power and great responsibility and every action that he's ever taken is what convinces his lifelong enemy, his greatest enemy, in my opinion, like, screw your goblins, Doc Ock is my number
absolutely.
One.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The fact that plot has pushed him back up to total A-list after he got, basically after he died during the Clone Saga, Ock never did anything of note again until now, basically. And I love that Slot finally propelled a character who deserves to be up there in the echelons of spider villainy to this position again. It is transformative for him. Ock understands finally everything that Spider-Man has always believed and everything that he has always fought for, and understands him in a way that probably nobody else ever does, and is transformed by it. The story is a total validation of everything Spider-Man has ever been about. It is in no way a disservice or a slap in the face. Just because you want to cry because he's gone for 2 years. 2 years is my bet, because twice a month that'll be 48 issues, which means he can come back in time just for 750.
Yeah.
It's like,
I was reading an interview somewhere, and I don't know where it was at. Maybe it was Comic Book Resources or something, where they were interviewing Dan Slott about this issue. And he made this really interesting point, which I thought was something I could probably mention real quick, is that they're basically, Doc Ock and Peter Parker, they're basically, the same guy. They just took a different course. Like, he grew up, he had Aunt May, he had Uncle Ben to teach him. Doc Ock, was basically an adult when he got his powers. He didn't have that learning curve that, Peter Parker had to know that, hey, this is this great responsibility. This is something I need to use for good. So, like, what if the roles were reversed? What if Peter Parker was the one that got his powers as the adult, and Doc Ock got his powers when he was a kid, and that's what this is. He gets that experience in his mind, his memories, and we're seeing. So they both could have turned out, like, Peter Parker could have been the villain, and Doc Ock could have been the hero. And I thought that was just so interesting. It just made. It's like when I read that, I was like, these people on the internet, you just don't get it. He's teasing the character. This is an honor to the character, is what this is.
The top trinity of Spider-Man villains are goblins, Ock, Venom. And, the goblin is always and there are corollaries there. Like, the goblin is the one who willfully used science to give power to himself in order to do evil, whereas Spider-Man is the one who accidentally received powers from science and chose to do good with them. There's the mirror there. And Venom, of course, is the anti-Spider-Man. All the power, none of the responsibility. And you find that a lot of retellings, like the Ultimate Spider-Man and the 90s Spider-Man cartoon and the films and the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon, they really do try to reinvent Eddie Brock, well, to give him a real personality, to be fair, because he had no personality in the comics for an awfully long time, to give him, a valid reason to be Venom. And that essentially involves turning him into, the anti-Peter Parker, the photographer who gets disgraced and so on and so forth, and no family, no support, etc. But Dr. Octopus has always been the anti-Peter Parker from the outset. The formerly mild-mannered man who gets powers in a science accident and goes down the dark path because he doesn't have loved ones and people who teach him the right way to live the way Peter does. That's what he's always been. And it's a story like this that just shows that to you, how close these two characters really can be. And in a way, I don't think I've ever really seen talked about in a story. But at the same time, it doesn't feel necessary to spell it out for you. It's like, oh, you could have been me, I could have been you. We were brothers once. Nothing like that. It's just how similar these men and their intelligences and their thought processes and their dedication and their determination is. And as I say, I've always loved Dr. Octopus, so I am so ready for the Superior Spider-Man. Now, I'm not denying it's going to be a little odd. It's going to be really weird, because it's like Daredevil last week. We'll remember that we had our little sneak appearance of the Superior Spider-Man in it.
Yeah.
And we get, it's like you get that final page of Daredevil, and your one, Kirsten is talking to somebody off panel, You figure out it's Spider-Man already. And then he goes, I will find Daredevil, and I will crush him. And then you, yeah. the reader, do exactly what Kirsten McDuffie does, and you go, oh, thank you. Wait, what? it's the superior Spider-Man, because I'm going to have to mentally check myself every time I see Spider-Man appear in a comic now.
Yeah.
To remind myself that it's a superior Spider-Man, because it is a huge change, and it has... I mean, how it's going to play out across the Marvel Universe is the truly interesting thing, because yeah. a single visit to a psychic should be able to figure this stuff out.
You'd think, but who knows?
But he's got memories in there, so who knows? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I am deeply interested to see how it goes.
I think
it as a short-term story, as a mature exploration of the ramifications of a hokey done-in-one plot, of something that we normally treated as a hokey done-in-one plot, and it's slot. Well, who is never going to do anything to harm Spider-Man.
No. No.
In the long term. That's the thing.
And at the same time, he also will hurt him a lot because he loves it. You know?
Yeah, he'll hurt him, but he won't harm him.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that's the thing about this is that regardless, you know, it has so much potential for interesting stories. You know, how Doc Ock is going to handle certain situations. You know, what he's going to be like in those situations. How people are going to react to him. How he's going to react to others. And if nothing else, I mean, there's a lot of story here to be told, and I think that's the end of, you know, to kind of wrap this up because we are kind of running over time, but that regardless, there's a lot of story here to tell, and I think for those of us who appreciate good storytelling, good comics, and aren't just so crazy about, oh my God, you killed Peter Parker. You know, this is going to be good stuff. I do want to recommend, I'm not going to talk about it, but as a final bit, I do want to recommend that you read at least the DeMatteis backup story in here, because it's really touching. Especially, it was a good thing to read, like, right after it, because it's like your emotions are so high, like, right after reading, the main issue, that was, like, just such a touching little backup. I didn't read the other one, unfortunately. I wanted to move on to
15.1. It's another one. It's like the 20th anniversary issue, mm-hmm. where you get two fairly random backups.
Yeah.
Where one is actually kind of a celebration of the entire history of Spider-Man filtered through a slightly cracked prism. But it's the sort of story you would expect in an issue like this. And then the other one is a goofy... It's a good, cute little story.
It's cute, though. I liked it.
I have nothing against it, but it's like, if you're going to put two backups into the 700th issue of Spidey, and this throwaway little fun cutesy thing is one of them, I get that this was $8 already and pretty friggin' huge, but... Yeah. I really think that an issue like this should have more than two throwaway backups. It's the same with the 20th anniversary issue.
What they should have done is traded it out with this 15.1 Avenging, which is the other thing that was recommended you read after it, because it does follow up basically right after, and it's Doc Ock sort of both reveling in his victory and then deciding who he's going to be and what he's going to do. And he also, in that issue, sort of builds the first set of his like new tech. So you see him making the lenses and the clawed gauntlets and everything. So not a stellar issue in terms of like story. It's not going to blow you away, but there's some neat little bits in it. So it's worth a read. Also, hey, Yost is going to be taking over Avenging Spider-Man. Guess what's going on my pull list? So
Avenging Spider-Man, he's doing that now?
Yeah, he's taking over Avenging. So yeah, so that's totally going on my list because, well, I like him on other stuff.
Yost is good.
He does that Scarlet Spider-Man.
He does that Scarlet Spider-Man book, yeah.
So, yeah, there
yeah, exactly. So, all right. Well, very good then.
All I know is that my issue's already lost its value since I just noticed I have a tear at the back of mine.
I have I have a staple loose. So the center page right at the death.
Yep,
me too. Is
that's
loose.
That's where it's at.
Yeah.
I wonder.
The book is too big. It should have been like one of Steve's. Yeah.
Set a cardboard cover. Maybe with a hologram on.
Ooh, hologram. Ooh.
I would not change that cover, which I know we're not doing best cover, but I love that cover. I would probably get a poster of that.
Which one? The named one, or do you have the one with the
It's the one with all the images of like all the artists that's ever worked on Spider-Man forming the eye.
Yeah, there's another cover, I think, which was sideways buildings that had the names of everybody that's ever worked on.
Yeah, that's Marcus Martin. Too. That one's really nice,
yeah,
too.
That's a good one, too. Although, I love the comment that Dan Slott showed his parents that, and their comment was, well, your name should be bigger on there.
And I must have been scaled in order of, like, number of stories written.
Could be.
Maybe. Something like that.
I don't know. I agree. Anyway, all right, let's get to it then. Let's get to our picks of 2012.
Drum roll.
So drum roll, please.
Jingles. Sound effects, editing later.
Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. All right, so.
Is King Kong coming out? Is that?
That was the music that's used in 2001. I don't know.
And the tweet has been sent out, so people need to read and watch. All right. Come on,
people. All right. So, best miniseries. We'll go through these. Just make a few notes, if you will, as for what your pick. We already have our picks down, so we're just going to basically relay them to you, the listeners, and you can agree or not. If you disagree, tweet us, let us know if we're live or if not, otherwise, and we'll laugh at you because there are picks and we don't care. All right. not likely. All right. Chris McFeely, your pick for best miniseries.
My pick for what, sorry?
Miniseries.
We're starting with minis. Okay. It wasn't a top-tastic year for miniseries.
Nope.
No, not a lot. I mean, this is something that a lot of the retailers almost got away from in turn, you know, the like the big two. They just didn't do a lot of miniseries this year.
I mean, DC actually probably did more than Marvel, which is the wacky thing, despite the New 52. Like, they had a couple of things. They had their Huntress miniseries. They had their Penguin miniseries, which I heard was very good, but didn't read. And Gray and Palmiotti have been busy doing Freedom Fighter miniseries, one after the other. We've had Human Bomb. We've had Phantom Lady. We've had The Ray. There's a new JSA miniseries that kicked off. Whereas Marvel this year have actively focused away from miniseries. It's been about tightening their focus on their core brands and just putting the franchise name X-Men, Avengers, whatever, in the title of the new books and going. And we lost a lot of miniseries at the start of this year that I probably would be talking about now. Nick Spencer and Becky Cloonan's Victor Von Doom was one I was really looking forward to. Fred Van Lente's Destroyers. I think Kyle Hotz was on the art for that Destroyers. I was really looked like it would be a great fun romp. But you know, even in a year whenever we had a massive crossover between the two main franchises, we got one miniseries out of it. You know, miniseries on the down low this year for Shizzle. So what I'm gonna give the nod for then this year.
I haven't heard that forever.
Wow.
That out there.
The fact that an Irishman said that, it's just...
I love it. I love
it. Wow. That sort of made my brain, like, I'm in the different...
Easy night. We're only on the first award.
I know. Man.
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to give my vote this year. It's a slightly lopsided vote, but we've gone to try and talk about different things each year in these categories. So my vote, what I'm going to give the nod to, is Steve Gerber's Infernal Man-Thing. You'll probably remember me talking about this when it was coming out. The final published work from Steve Gerber, who we lost a couple of years back, it was a script that was written back in the 80s, but which the artwork was never completed for until now, and which it was published as a miniseries this year, which is the story of a writer from an earlier one of Gerber's works, Man-Thing issues, returning to the Man-Thing swamp to write his final work. And it is essentially the story. It's an incredibly... but very subtly. It's not the sort of story that screams at you that this is an autobiographical work, but if you know anything about Gerber and his work and the mediums that he's worked in and his attitudes towards the industry, it's actually a startlingly, subtly intimate and autobiographical work, and the story of what happens to a man when he goes to war with his own mind, when a man's mind turns against him, and how a creative mind deals with that and what the creative repercussions are of that, as well as the psychological and emotional ones. Quite frankly, the fact that it wasn't written as his last work and yet is published as his last work and is so encapsulating of his entire attitudes to the industry You know, there are times whenever old work will be found in a drawer and dusted off and published, and you know, look at it and go, "Well, I can see why they didn't publish that." Thankfully, this is going to stand out. You know, as it's everything that was ever good about Steve Gerber's work, and I heartily encourage anybody to read it. The reason I say it's a slightly lopsided vote is because it's actually dreadful as a miniseries. It should have been published as a single graphic novel.
So it's okay. So that'll be your best pick for trade or graphic novel then?
Well, not really, because I have another pick for that.
But, okay. But I mean, for next year, you know what I'm saying? Like, for next year,
yeah,
then you can do that.
I'm the graphic novel rather than the miniseries. But I read and experienced it as a miniseries, so I'm going to give it the nod for best miniseries of the year. Just quite a powerful story of man at war with himself.
Chris Triplett.
I did not read many miniseries this year. I honestly, if I would have been able to pick it, I would have actually picked Minuteman, but I didn't feel right about it because it didn't finish this year. I kind of felt like it needs to finish this year for me to pick it because we got one issue left.
Well, and because I think we had made the point too that last issue is going to depend a lot on what we think of the series.
Like, I'm loving it so far. I'm fine with it so far. But, yeah, that last issue could be whoosh. You know,
yeah, I could really change things. Yeah.
We talked about it when we reviewed it, but it's like it has left things. There has been this subtle hinted possibility of what's to come here. And while I don't think any of us would like to believe that that's where it's going, because it's a terrible broad strokes picture of sexuality and homosexuality that plays to some awful stereotypes, which may indeed just be the writer's intentions to play to these awful stereotypes and highlight them, but it doesn't change the fact that that's what they are. And you don't want to believe that's where he's going, but the way the last issue was left hanging, you're like, is he going to go there? And if he goes there, it could retroactively taint the whole thing. So
So I didn't want to pick it, but I wanted to just kind of get an honorable mention because it was good what we read of it. But you know, I picked Spider-Man because, like I said, I didn't read many minis, but it was very good. It was a book that you basically had to read if you were reading Ultimate Spider-Man. And it's kind of good to get a book, like a miniseries that actually matters, because, you know, most minis, they really don't matter. It's like, oh, you know, in this mini, you know, Spider-Man and, you know, Captain America is going to go fight the Red Skull, and we'll never mention that again. But, you know, in this book, it's like, it's actual, you know, the ends of, like, certain plot points in Ultimate Spider-Man. Who was Mysterio? Oh, well, it turns out it was Mysterio from the Amazing Spider-Man universe. You know, how did, the new Ultimate Spider-Man meet up with, you know, the Parkers and kind of lead in the direction where he was going to get his web shooter for the first time?
Well, the continuity is all over the place, though, because it doesn't match up with the main Spidey series itself. Like, he gets web shooters and meets May and Mary Jane, like, in two different ways, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't happen in two different ways, but, like, the things that happen in Spider-Man cannot chronologically fit with the way he meets them and when he gets his web shooters in the main Ultimate Spider-Man series. But that's irrelevant for the purposes of the miniseries itself.
The point I make is, like, you know, he meets them in the miniseries. Like, this is, like, a big thing. It's, like, it's almost like it's so big that it couldn't be contained in, like, the monthly title. It had to be its own story. It had to be, like, in the miniseries. And it was good, and getting, you know, Peter's perspective from, you know, the Amazing Spider-Man universe on, like, you know, seeing these loved ones in this different way and how they're responding to him since, you know, Peter's dead in the Ultimate Universe. You got these great little moments. And, you know, beyond that, though, I mean, it was a talky book. It was a Bendis book. I mean, that's the negatives, but other than that, there were these big things, and you know, it was a good book. I enjoyed it, and like I said, if you're reading Ultimate Spider-Man, it's a must-have. You had to read this book, or else you're going to miss out on a lot, I think.
I think we said it back at the time. It's like, as the 50th anniversary year event for Spidey, there wasn't a lot really here for readers who had come through from the mainstream Spidey for the event, but for anybody who'd been reading Ultimate Spider-Man for any length of time, and I don't just mean Miles Morales' Spider-Man, I mean just mean like Ultimate Spider-Man from the start, it was immensely cathartic.
Yeah. Good book. Enjoyed it.
So imagine if it would have been Doc Ock. That would have been really... That would have been different.
And that end thing, that last page, maybe that will come up in Superior Spider-Man, you know, that little search to see who Miles Morales is in the Amazing Universe, because remember, he saw and he was kind of shocked.
Yeah, so
maybe that's coming.
Okay. Nicole?
Okay, you guys are going to be surprised when I mention this one. Because I didn't read a whole lot of miniseries either, but the one that I think I reviewed almost every week that it came out was Marvel Zombies Destroy. You only had to read it because it's got Dum Dum Dugan in it. That's all the reason you need. So it was really good because you had old Loki, you know, doing what he does best, causing a commotion, and when his schemes go completely awry, and he turns all of Asgard into zombies and they come to Earth. So, yeah, it's just a really good fun. There's a little bit of gore in there, but it's just a fun little mini series to see how Loki's brain actually really works.
Nice.
Yeah, because you go from, oh, Loki's got this plan. Oh, it goes wrong. Oh, he's sorry for it. But in the end, is he really? No. So that's basically, it was really fun. You've got zombie goats, man. Zombie goats.
Yeah, I mean.
Now, who wrote that? Was that Peter David? Because I said that was Peter David also.
I think it was.
So there you go.
All my comics. Yes, I believe so. Yeah, yes. It was really a lot of fun. It was just like, oh, here we go. This is the good old classic Loki.
And no surprise on my end, you know, like I said, I've been reading everything that's been coming out of the Before Watchmen. Most of it's been awful. But Silk Spectre was a very nice surprise out of that run, and that's going to be my pick for best miniseries. Had a lot of nice moments, well thought out, well planned out. The art was, of course, absolutely amazing.
So, honorable mention to Amanda Connor on art. That's not my pick for best artist, but man,
yeah.
That was a beautiful.
Oh, yeah, the Connor art on that was really great. So, nice little story there. I'll just leave that as my pick, and I think I've said plenty about that throughout the year. So,
you know what the thing about Amanda Connor is that she often draws covers to things, and then it really pisses me off when I pick them up and she's not drawing the inside.
I know, right? That's
like, yeah.
She's done a lot of that this
year. Yeah. Yeah, she's really good at covers. We cut our category for covers, but man, her covers really for Silk Spectre were pretty outstanding.
That's
so
true.
Yeah.
So
my pick for cover, it was like Tiger Moore. Like that cover is just great. It's just that series on that cover. So there you go. Awesome.
We'll try to go through these maybe a little more quickly, but best ongoing for Chris McFeely.
Promising nothing.
I'm trying. I know.
Best ongoing, so that's best continuous ongoing, that is, something that did not start new this year, which will probably come as absolutely no surprise at all, that my vote, without deliberation, was Journey into Mystery. While it was being published, I mean, it is still being published, but Kieran Gillen's Loki story wrapped up this year, and it has turned into a completely different thing under Catherine Emmerman about itself. But for my money, the best thing Marvel was publishing while Gillen's Loki story was at its apex, and that's so surprising to me because, as I've said on the show many times, I'm not a fan of straight fantasy, but the way that this story just approached the mythological world with its stories built around the power of dreams and writings and stories, and the way it was always a complete 30-issue story that he knew the ending of when he started, and everything that happened in it built towards its finale. Every time, for a book that what must be at least a solid half of its 30 issues were involved with crossovers, if not more, in Fear Itself, in Exiled with the New Mutants, and in Everything Burns with Thor, it owned those stories completely. It, like we've seen with Christos Gage on Avengers Academy, another book which, you know, gets an honorable mention in this category, it just owns them, and it uses the crossovers to make itself better, and it makes the crossovers better by virtue of being involved with them. It's a story that just makes you love its cast and builds an incredibly deep fantasy world that by all rights I should have no interest in, but which absolutely won me over in an amazingly short space of time. And I'm talking like pages, not issues, pages, yeah, before I was totally on board with that comic. And I did have my heart ripped out somewhat by the incredibly clever, cunning, heartbreaking, slightly mean-spirited, but self-aware and genre-savvy ending that was always worked into the way it was always going to be. A book that is destined to be on best-of lists for the year and best-of lists for the decade to come. I cannot recommend it to anybody strongly enough. It is the one book of everything that's come out this year, continuing to come out this year, that I try to push on people. And who they and they always come back for more after they try it out.
Look at you being a pusher. Jeez.
Yeah,
I know.
God, why did you give me a taste? I wanted more.
Whose drugs have you got, Journey into Mystery?
I simply cannot say enough about Journey into Mystery, so I'm going to stop really it there because it's going to run on an awfully long time. Oh, except to say that it is still continuing. I was very pleasantly surprised to discover that even under the new writer with the new starring cast members, it's still maintaining a very high level of quality, and it's still very high up on the level of like best books Marvel publishes. So I will give it that.
Chris Triplett, quickly.
You know, if he hadn't picked Journey into Mystery, I would have picked it because it was.
I think we all would have.
I cannot wait until they do a collected edition of that. As soon as that happens, somebody needs to tell me.
Oh, you know what? One thing I should actually say that just an important thing about Journey. I've said it before on the show. The reason that it runs away with my nomination for it is because of the consistency of it. That's one thing I have to mention. Like, there are months whenever an issue of another comic would be better than Journey, and there are months when issues of other comics would be worse than Journey. But Journey has a rock-solid level of consistency right the way through. It never wavers. It never dips. It maintains this high baseline of quality all the way through. And that is why it runs away with the award.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry. Karen.
And so, like, you know, I'd have to pick. Like, I mean, like, my picks, it was really hard to pick, like, best ongoing series because I love so much stuff. Like, I love Saga. I love Daredevil. I love, you know, More Than Meets the Eye. But, dude, I love Spider-Man. So, of course, Amazing Spider-Man. Yeah. I mean,
what? When did this happen? I was
really.
I mean, the sky is blue. Everyone does this.
I mean, because, like, I still, like, will go and, like, you know, pick up a new issue of Amazing Spider-Man by Dan Slott, and I'm still sort of amazed at how great this book is. Because I remember the bad times. The times when, so you read Spider-Man, yeah, I guess it's a book I like. I guess I like it. I can now proudly say I love Amazing Spider-Man. I can proudly say that's like one of the first books that I read when I get my comics. New issue Amazing Spider-Man's out? Yes, I'm going to pick it up. Read it right now. And it was a good year. I mean, Ends of the Earth, we got, my brain is blanking here. Help me out. What else big stuff happened
this year?
Well, that
was the big centerpiece of the year. You know, this is not Amazing Spidey's best year. I think last year was a better year for Spidey. We got Spider Island this year, and I don't think anything's topped Spider Island. Ends of the Earth was great. You know, the Lizard arc was a little on the dim side. But this was also the year that gave us the Doctor Who two-parter.
That was a great one.
Peter adventuring in space. Yep. And, of course, in the year
the
of
return of the original Hobgoblin. So, like, you kill him off, and you make all the fanboys mad, and then what do? You sneak him back in, and you've got new Hobgoblin versus old Hobgoblin. Hell yes. I agree with you. There has probably been better years of Amazing Spider-Man, but, like, in the same way, I think that your thing with Journey, it's consistent. I mean, was there really a bad issue of Amazing Spider-Man? I don't think there was a bad issue.
No.
Nothing I would call bad.
There were highs and there were lows, but again, it's a consistent book, and it's been consistent for, God, how many years now? It's the best run of Spider-Man that's ever come. I mean, in my entire time of collected comics, I can't even imagine a run of Amazing Spider-Man that's been this good. And I've got to say it's the best series, the best ongoing series. Even though they killed off Peter Parker.
Damn you. No. All right, Nicole.
Okay. Like Triplett, don't be surprised what I'm going to say. My favorite for this year is the same as last year, is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because I have yet to be disappointed with this series. Every time I get this, that's like the first thing I read. Every month I get it. That's the first thing I read. And it's just like, as soon as I finish it, I'm just like, damn! where's my next edition? You
know? One
they
to another.
Pull out every single emotion you can come up. You're laughing one moment, you're crying, you're trying to figure out the mystery, you're rooting for the bad guys sometimes, you're rooting for the good guys. It's just well written, very well done. If you're not reading it, why not? I've been pushing it, just like JD was Scarlet Spider.
Nice.
Well, I've read Turtles, and I really like it, too. So
maybe if you read Scarlet Spider, then.
I might. I mean, I like Christopher Yost, and I like, you know, spider things, so maybe I would enjoy it.
Okay. Yes. So. Turtles it is. Very good.
What about you, JD?
My pick for this is I had to go with Batman.
I'm so glad you chose this.
This is the year that I got back into Batman, and it's like, so how could it not be my pick? From, you know, the whole Court of Owls story, and now we're into this death of the family with Joker. It's just like, oh, Scott Snyder's probably going to make me read Superman again.
Yeah, I think he
know?
Is. Right now.
So it's kind of like, man, damn you, Scott Snyder, for writing Batman so damn good. And, yeah, so that you know, how could that not be, you know, my best ongoing? Like I said, this is the year I got back into the Batman. And I love Batman.
I would probably be Batman, he's not really on my radar, but that's because I am kicking myself for not picking it up in single issue format when it kicked off. So I am getting the collections now. So I am kind of out of it on what's been happening. I mean, I'm vaguely aware, but I have not read this the Night of Owls, and I have not. Well, I have sort of read Death in the Family, even though I shouldn't be, because I should be waiting on the books. Yeah. But actually, I suppose that's a testament. It's so friggin' good that I do have to stop and look at the new issues when they come out because it is that good.
Also, I've heard I have a scary Joker voice, so I had to pick the Batman as well because it's now giving me apparently my creepy. Jokey Joker voice. So anyway.
It gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Does it really? Is it really that creepy? Is it really that?
It's best when like our video doesn't work and I can't see your face.
Oh, okay. I'll turn my video off when I do it so that you can see the Joker face and hear the voice. Okay. All right. Really quickly,
because I would really love to see Court of Owls and the Night of Owls like as a movie.
Wouldn't it? Yeah. Like it'd make a great DC.
I think that can't be too far off because DC have sort of abandoned any pretense of adapting anything but really famous and pretty current stories as their direct-to-video movies at this stage. Yeah. So that
could be a good one.
They might have to do it in a two-parter, like to get the whole of the Court of Owls and the Night of Owls in there. But that's
all right. Let's see. Okay, single issue. Some of these are pretty straightforward, so let's see here. Chris McFeely,
I have one down here for this, but as I've been sitting here thinking about it, I could think of a couple of ones, so I'm just going to pitch these out pretty quickly. It was one of the earliest issues of the year that we considered could be a good candidate for it. Defenders number 4 by Matt Fraction, and I think Michael Lark, I think, did the art on that issue. That was the Doctor Strange-centric issue in which we just got to look into the life of Doctor Strange and the way he deals with magical intruders. It was essentially a tale of the classical old Ditko magics versus the subculture Britpop Neil Gaiman-y stylings of magic and how the old ways just thrash down the new. And it gave us a little peep into this creepy, not creepy, but this slightly off-kilter Doctor Strange that Matt Fraction was creating. He always had the feeling was just holding something back ever so slightly from everyone else, because he did some pretty terrible things in the course of those 22 pages. Doctor Strange, I'm like, where is a Doctor Strange ongoing? I haven't read it yet, which is why it's not on my list, but it will be in the show later, is the season 1 Doctor Strange graphic novel, which I have here because I'm really looking forward to reading it. I just haven't got around to it yet. I think it was last year, maybe the year before, we got Mark Waid's really good Strange miniseries. A couple of years before, they got Brian Vaughn's absolutely excellent Doctor Strange the Oath mini. There have been lots of really good little Doctor Strange stories told in the last while. And I'm like, it's Marvel now. Let's give him a role. Let's give him a chance. Give me a Doctor Strange series. Yeah. I will buy it. Any Doctor Strange series you want to give me.
Yeah.
And
we'll even ended Avengers in a way where now would be the time you could do.
Yeah, really.
Which is surprising that they didn't do it.
I think we'll see it as like a mid-season replacement out of Marvel now. Like, I think if, you know, the first book to fail out of that, I think we'll see replaced by a Doctor Strange. I wouldn't be surprised anyway.
I mean, I could see why they haven't done it, because they have done it a couple of times and it hasn't worked, giving him his own series. I mean, but it seems like the time is fresh enough. So anyway, that was probably the best single. That's probably the best single Doctor Strange story in a while. So another one that I probably should mention.
I'm sorry, maybe they're waiting for a movie is what I was going to say. Because, like, you know, they said Doctor Strange movie is coming
now. I want that.
I want that with Charlie Sheen.
That with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, I can see that too. But I really want Charlie Sheen. Because I think that would be in the same way. Like, I see him as also similar to, like, you know, like a Stark. And so just in a different field of science.
That's it. It's, yeah.
So, you know, yeah. Totally.
Charlie Sheen talking about you.
Don't you want to see him? Just see Charlie Sheen with like the mustache and like all like the crazy cape and stuff? Come on.
He's like, I do magic and shit.
Yeah. Be awesome.
Another truly excellent one this year as well. It's going over old ground, so I'm just going to say that it was the last issue of Gillen's Journey into Mystery was a truly fantastic issue that was everything from touching to sweet to absolutely heartbreaking to just total head swerve. It ran the absolute gamut of emotions with beautiful art and a fine finale to the series. And, of course, we couldn't let this go past without mentioning Amazing Spider-Man number 698 from just last month, which is... I don't even know how to describe it. It's just the fact that it's a very straightforward issue for the first 20 pages. And you get those you get the sense that something is off.
Yeah.
But then you hit those last two pages, and the whole issue is flipped on its head, and you immediately have to go back and reread it again.
Yeah.
And I can't think of any comic that's done that.
Well, and it's almost like, I take it as like the beginning of like a roller coaster ride, in the sense that it's very disarming. You're just kind of going up the hill for the first part, and it's very standard. And then, you know, the end pages is like as you tip over the end and you can just see the hill and the turn and twist. I mean, you pretty much from that point, I mean, even though we did have some debate, I think that you could really see how it was all going to play out since you knew about Superior and everything. And it just kind of becomes that point of horror as you realize that you're going to have to go through all of those twists and turns, you know.
I love how you wanted to go back and like look and say, when did this happen?
Like, I know, like, I know. I was really hoping. I was really hoping that it would have been earlier, but I think this is fine too. I mean, obviously, this is a great way to tell it as well. So, I totally agree with that pick, and it would have been my pick. And I picked earlier.
It's a great cover too. I love that cover. It's just his face laying in the bed, looking like almost dead, and just Peter Parker.
Yeah,
I mean, even the cover. You pick the cover up. Yeah, you see that cover. You're like, what? What's going on here?
Yeah.
It's a solid single 22 pages. It's an exceptionally well put together story from cover to the last page. Like, even inclusive of the cover is part of the story's trick. It's hard to come up it's a very straightforward story for so much of its run, but it's the fact that it just makes you reread it all over again, tucks in an entirely different meaning, and it's just a very masterful bit of deception.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, Chris Triplett. Quickly then
I'm going to do my pick, but like as an honorable mention, I just want to say Saga number one, because it's a book that I had no interest in getting, didn't even know what it was. You guys sold me on it, I read it, and for a book that's like a new IP that I've never read anything from before to sell me so well on the first issue, why would it not be an honorable mention for one of the best comics of the year? And creating that world was just a great thing. And I didn't want to say that it is my number one, but it's a very good book, and I felt like I needed an honorable mention. My number one has to be Batman number 5.
Which is this is a Labyrinth issue, correct?
This is the join Batman on his trip through a labyrinth of insanity. You're not just reading about a man that's basically falling apart throughout the 27 pages of a comic. You're on that journey with him.
Yeah.
Is this the one that you actually had to turn the comic around?
Yes.
And
to your credit, I mean, in the pick, I mean, this was the issue that really had me. Like, this was the issue when I read it. I was like, yeah, I've made the right choice in jumping on this Batman title. This is great. So
it's such a surprise, too, because, like, you know, before that, like, all the stuff I was getting kind of, you know, straightforward. It's interesting. There's this organization that, you know, nobody's ever heard of before, and everybody's ever seen them. There's just kind of like whispers about them. But then, like, you know, you get to that issue where they've got him, and he's down there, and he's been drugged. He doesn't know how long he's been there, and he has no idea how to get out, and he's just losing it. You're just seeing Batman in a way that you never see Batman before. I mean, we even talked about, like, even the art, like Greg Capullo's art, how his cape is just getting more tattered and strewn throughout the issue as his mind is going. The eye that's gouging out of his cowl, you know, see his eyeball. And then, like, you know, Nicole's talking about turning the pages. It's like you're swimming, you're going down with him. And it's like the one time this year where I read a comic, it's like, you can't read this as a digital comic. This is a physical, pick it, hold it in your hand comic where you're like reading it and going through it, and you're like almost one with the comic. You can't have like a device, a tablet or your computer reading this. You physically are with this comic on this journey, and it's it's amazing. I mean, it was, like you said, it's just a revelation in comics. I thought it was great. I can't wait to see what he's doing with the Joker when he gets to the end of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's been a very good year, actually, for comics that have pushed. In a year where J.H. Williams really let us down on Batwoman, not to go on about that or anything, but in a year when Batwoman really fell off its pedestal, it was nice to pick up issues of other comics and find them exploring artistically in that way. One that I probably should have mentioned but didn't was just last month's issue of Action Comics, which is probably the best issue of the whole run so far. With the three timelines and another dimension colliding in a narrative cacophony. And one that I can't put on the list in all good consciousness is Transformers Robots in Disguise number 10, actually, with its absolutely head-bending time travel story, which is completely no good at all for an uninitiated reader and deeply challenging even for a regular reader, but which was an issue that gave me a lot of personal reward as I read and reread and reread it. And that's another one of my favorites this year.
Yeah.
And even issues of Transformers More Than Meets the Eye that explored with multiple narrators telling a story or non-linear storytelling. It was really nice to pick up, and particularly in the case of Transformers, to pick up these comics and find this sort of experimentation in places where you wouldn't expect it.
Yeah, I loved 12 also. I thought about putting 12 on the list because so much of that series of More Than Meets the Eye comes to a head in 12. There's like so much stuff, and it's like the end of the year, and I didn't want to pick it because, you know, it was like the most recent issue in my mind. You know, I looked back the whole year, and I was like thinking, you know, the book that I really liked was Batman number 5, but 12 is just another example of why that series is so awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Where are we at here then? Nicole.
Yeah, this comes to no surprise because I kept this comic book by my nightstand, ever since I read it. It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the micro series of Splinter. Now, you don't have to read anything about Turtles. You don't have to know anything about Turtles. This is about a journey of a guy, his past life with his family, and how he changes from all these beliefs into one moment, giving it all up just so he could feel that he's avenging his family. I've never cried so hard during a comic than this one. So I still do read it. I'm like, this is so sad. But it's
and I
awesome
haven't read that one, too. That's the one I haven't read, Nicole.
That micro series is amazing. But this one issue, you turn that last page and you're like, oh my gosh, he's just done a 180 from everything he's believed. He's going Splinter's gonna go insane and just get what the revenge that he's been looking for. And you're just like, whoa, this is awesome. And sad at the same time because he loses his, spoiler, he loses his whole family in this issue. And you're just, oh, God. Wow. Yeah, so you guys gotta go read it. It's just heartbreaking and you cheer for him at the end. So it's just like, oh. So yeah, I keep it up right by my bed because if I need to read something, that's what I go to.
You're gonna need something that's gonna make you happy.
That's the one.
That's what you're into.
It's been a good year for issues like that as well.
Oh,
Avengers Academy and Journey into Mystery and things like that. The issues where you're like, oh God, what are you doing with this? DC Comics.
Oh, the thing is, like Feely said, that last issue of Journey into Mystery, that was really good. That's probably like one of my second ones. It's in there, you know. But this one, you guys, just, even if you're not a Turtles fan, just read it because it's got a story in there that you just can't put down. I love it. All right, Jake, what about you?
Let's see. Well, my pick is sort of a left field pick, I would think, like for me especially. I'm in the Fantastic Four 605, which this is the issue that's right after sort of the end of all the major story that we talked about coming out of Fantastic Four. So this is kind of a self-contained story. It's kind of interesting because you don't have to have read everything. But this is the issue where they sort of explore the future of like Ben Grimm's life, where he's not really aging when he's in his rock form, but he spends that year, a week a year, you know, human. And so it sort of extrapolates out, like, how long his lifespan is going to be, you know, based on living basically as a human for a week, a year. And it's just kind of a touching story to see, you know, him, you know, change and or not change in some ways throughout time and, you know, living alongside Franklin, because the implication here is that Franklin is becoming immortal. It's just great.
It's such a sad issue.
It is in some ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of feels. Lots of feels in that. So, but it's an issue. It's like one of the ways I knew it was going to be, it was one of my favorite, is that I was thumbing through some comics like a month or two ago, and I saw that issue, and I had to stop what I was doing and read it. And I think that's the sign of like a good comic. You know, it's one that you keep around, or one that it's like when you come by it, you have to stop and read it. So, so that's my pick, 605, Fantastic Four. We are really... I'm running out of time, so we'll try to...
Well, we start late. Yeah.
It'll happen.
Ruthu. I don't want to rush, but I do want to rush. So, okay.
It's okay to run a little long in the end of year review.
It is. It's true. And we are. Okay. Best new series, Chris McFeely.
Is there any doubt that it can be Saga? I'm just going to jump right to it. It's Saga.
You took my pick, McFeely. You took my pick.
Yeah, you basically took all of our pick.
I think everybody was going to go for Saga. But I get to talk about it because I told you all to read it.
True.
Yeah. Before it even came out and before I had any ability to tell you it was going to be good or not, I still told you to read it. Brian K. Vaughan's return to comics, one of my favorite authors from his work on Runaways, Why the Last Man, Ex Machina, the aforementioned Doctor Strange miniseries. Went to work in television a couple of years, overjoyed to see him return to comics. I didn't really know much about Saga when it came out, and I was buying that because it was Brian K. Vaughan's return to comics.
I knew nothing about it. You're the one that told me this book existed. He was like, hey guys, Saga's coming out, get it. And I was like, okay, I guess.
I didn't know what it was. I knew about the... The cover controversy, but I had no idea what the content was.
Yeah, that's
was,
what I was going to say. That's the reason why I knew it was the whole cover thing. So.
But the supremely odd thing about it is that, given that it is a world, it's universe and its story, it's set in a world that is equal parts fantasy, hard fantasy, and equal parts hard sci-fi, two things that I'm not particularly drawn to at the best of times and utterly apathetic towards in other times, collide in a story that draws me in so much that I have to struggle to examine it and really understand why that is. And it is because in the midst of this insane world live incredibly real people. And this is the allure of Saga, is the sheer believability and reality and likability of its cast of characters. You know, you've got Mum, Wings, Gun, Technology, Dad, Horns, sword, magic. You boil it down to that. That's it. It's a
robot princess.
and robots and giant spider women and bounty hunters and this incredible, weird, fantastical world that is just filtered through a prism of day-to-day life and reality that somehow makes all these weird elements that I would normally have no time for. One of the simple book that I look forward to the most out of any month, like when it comes out. I mean, there would be very few books that I would promote to the top of the stack as regularly as Saga goes. Sometimes, like with Journey into Mystery, for instance, I only save Journey into Mystery for the end of the stack because I know I'm getting a good read and I'm going to get a nice, dense little powerful little read. But Saga's like, I'll read this shit now.
Yeah.
It's the first thing that
That wait, when it went on hiatus was awful. Oh my God. When Saga went on hiatus there for a little bit, that was the longest wait, I think.
Oh, I know.
Because it's an image book, and when an image book slips off schedule, you're like, I'm never getting this back.
Yeah.
That's what you think. That's what happens. But Saga went on a pre-planned schedule, and it's still working it, you know. And like Journey into Mystery, not that there's any comparison between the books or anything, just my fondness for both of them, is that we are talking pages by the time this thing had me won over, you know. And Journey into Mystery was working with an established cast of characters, whereas this was completely new world, completely new characters. I don't think I've ever become as attached to brand new characters out of nowhere as quickly as I did with these guys. And I'm talking like the whole cast.
Yeah.
Everybody in Saga has something going on for them. It's like I was drawn to Metal in Avengers Academy very quickly, like first issue territory again, pages. But the entire cast of Saga are just
fantastic. Like, how do you become like connected to a character that's nothing but text?
Yeah.
I am. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the real world and real people presented in this incredible blend of sci-fi and fantasy that actually goes further afield in its sheer wackiness than a straight story about either one of those two elements would, from little the legless ghost teenagers to giant strangely, distractingly, disturbingly sexy spider women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's not afraid to show you the dark and horrible side of things as well, as we discussed at length about an earlier issue this year. And that's probably the one issue of a comic book that we spent the most time talking about out of any episode this year. It's another one I just can't say enough good things about, with a cast and an attitude that... If this cast of characters can't win you over into enjoying a world that contains a lot of elements you might not normally be interested in, there's probably no hope for you, frankly. Saga. Yeah. I mean, next year, something big is going to have to come along next year to knock this off best ongoing. So we'll see how it goes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, and this has been, honorable mention as well. I don't really want to vote for it, but honorable mention has to go to Thor, God of Thunder as well. Only three issues in, but absolutely fantastic. Again, high myth stuff that normally I wouldn't be truly interested in, fantasy stuff, but just an absolutely excellent comic.
You've said that three times now. I'm thinking you are a fantasy fan.
Yeah, you might actually be, I think. Yeah.
I know, I swear, honestly. I tried to watch Lord of the Rings last night, and it was shit. No, wait, what did I say? I said nothing.
excellent. Okay, Chris Triplett.
Okay, now, McFeely said that Saga is, like, usually at the top of his pile of books to read. I agree, that's why I was going to pick it, but he got to it first. But, like, that next book on the pile that I read right after it is Transformers More Than Meets the Eye.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And this year, it was its first year, because I went and I looked, January 2012. Oh, my God, it's only been here for 1 year. And it's a Transformers book, for God's sake! Which means something. I mean, those books are not supposed to be good, but this book was excellent. And we're not just saying it because we're on a TF Radio Network, because, I mean, it's a great book. I mean, from issue 1 to 12, I've enjoyed every issue. I love the characters. I love the characters! Robots with no faces and little eyeball things. How does that guy have a character? But he does! Yep. And I want to know what's going to happen next.
Even the book that is exploring the plot lines you would have expected. With the whole hook for the two new series being the war has ended. Robots in Disguise is the one that's actually exploring what, you know, logically happens next. And it's a good book, too. It's a good book. It's a more talk. Slightly lower boil on the thing. But, again, Robots in Disguise is essentially a sci-fi wandering between planets quest thing, which is not the sort of thing I would pounce upon. But what sells more than meets the eye is the same thing as what sells Saga. Fantastic characters.
Yeah.
It all came to, like I said, it all kind of came into the head there, because you've got all these plots that have been dangling, the stuff with Whirl paying out there, the sort of, the relationship with Rewind and Brain went...
Crumdome.
Yeah. Crumdome, yeah. The stuff with, my brain's blanking again. Cyclonus and his little buddy. What's his name again?
Tailgate.
Yeah. It all came in. These are robots building relationships, and they're Transformers, for God's sakes. When I think about it, I think this is ridiculous that there's this book that I care so much about, and I honestly think that even if it wasn't Transformers, I would still love this book. It could be Star Trek. These could be Starfleet officers, and I think I would still enjoy it. It could be the cast of Firefly, and I think I would still enjoy it. It could be I don't know. It could be Bone. It could be those little Bone guys, and they're hairy men, from the Jeff Smith book. And I would still, it could be anything, and I think that means something. It means that it's a great book.
Yeah,
and it's my pick.
Even the premise is not inherently Transformers-y.
Yeah,
it just happens to be Transformers starring in this sci-fi quest premise.
Yeah, I mean, and even at that though, I don't want to say like it could be anything. I mean, these characters have particular, like backstory, mythos, ways that they interact with each other that that are particular to Transformers. But it's just still good.
Yeah.
I mean, you say you have to read it first. I had to stop reading More Than Meets the Eye first, because it kept coloring everything I would read after it.
Yeah.
I mean, the pinnacle of that was when I hit issue 6 of More Than Meets the Eye with that great bottle. It was essentially a bottle issue with Wartmax holding Rung and Whirl hostage in the thing. And then I finished that and I was like, jeez. And I set that down and I was like, oh, Matt Fraction store. Okay, I've got to stop reading this first because it's ruining all my other comics.
Yeah.
I read my comics differently. There's certain things like it's gotta read Daredevil. Daredevil's
that's always
gotta read Spider-Man. Gotta read Saga. Gotta read Batman. Gotta read More Than Meets the Eye. I can't wait. I can't wait. The book comes out. I gotta read it before someone spoils it.
This is a difficult thing. Like, we should have a whole episode on how do you organize your read order week to week. Like, but More Than Meets the Eye is awesome. It's a great pick.
Great.
Nicole.
All right, this was a surprise to me when I was going through. I'm like, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm mentioning a Superman comic, but not what you think. I'm talking about Superman Family Adventures, the one that replaced Tiny Titans. First of all, I'm mentioning a Superman comic because Superman's so predictable, but not in this one. Because this comic made me realize, maybe go back to when I was a kid, this is why I got into comics, or got into superheroes, because it was so fun. And you think, it gets to the mindset of a child of how they think superheroes are. And it's just fun to relive like a child just for those few moments. Like, oh, yeah, I remember when I was little, I used to think that, or I used to do that, or I'd want that. And it's just fun. It's just innocent fun that anyone could read. And guaranteed, you'll at least have a couple laughs. Laughs out loud.
But you're dead inside if you can,
Yeah, if you don't laugh through these comics, you have no soul. It's just so much fun. And I really think that DC did a great job on this one. Work on the rest of the 52, just like you did this one.
Yeah.
In a year, whenever so much of DC's output has swerved very far away from being accessible to all ages, it is really nice to see that a book like this can still continue to come out, and that they'll still put creators like Baltazar and Franco are the guy. They understand how to write for kids Because it's not. This is not like for all ages. This is for kids, but in a way that can be so enjoyed by an adult as well, who has innocence in them and any measure of joy. Like, I don't think it's no Tiny Titans, but what is? But I'm enjoying the fact in Superman as well that there does seem to be a little quiet story plot, like a story arc happening.
It's there. You gotta look. You know, you kind of go back.
He's gonna keep looking for those Brainiac symbols. They keep appearing.
But for me to say something about Superman as being one of my favorites of the year, that's a big thing. Like I said, and I love it. I love it. So much fun.
Awesome. Well, I was told I was wrong about this pick. So my pick is Scarlet Spider. I think that, this book started again January 1, so it is technically a new series, much like More Than Meets the Eye. I think that this series had a huge hill to overcome, which is that it had the title Scarlet Spider, which comes with a lot of negative connotations from the 90s.
They should just call it Clone Saga.
But not only that, then you find out it's helmed by Kane, and you're like, you know, then even more so. But, Yost has put together just a really great story, a really great, explanation for, Kane, why he's hanging out in Houston. He's built a lot of interesting characters around, Scarlet Spider. And, he's been through a couple of different, there was even an event this year, the Minimum Carnage, which tied into Venom. So it's just, for being its first year, it's been huge. It's moving on to next year. And I have been unable to get anyone on this show to read it. And I'm hoping that if maybe I pick it for my best, that they might be convinced that this would be, something good. But we'll see. The close second is Hawkeye, of course. Just because, that series has just been really great for the first six issues of it. So,
is doing an honorable mention, I've got to mention Ponies then.
Okay. So, well, you get
two issues. It rocked.
Yeah.
There you go.
So for two issues, Ponies has been great.
I think your choices are great because seriously, Hawkeye series, Scarlet Spider series. Who
would think that those would have legs at all?
Nobody wanted these. Nobody knew that these were going to be good. And yeah, it's great that you get stuff that you expect to be bad, and it turns out that it's actually pretty cool.
I like how I organized.
I guess another one like Batman, where I am just kicking myself that I did not get on the individual issues, and I got to get the trades for this because I don't even get the chance to look at it as a retailer because it's gone before I can even just pick it up and take a moment to look at it. It's. I'm really kicking myself over missing this one again.
And JD Barricade says, if you would admit your undying love for Dan Ketch, I might actually read Scarlet Spider.
I would have to have an undying love for Dan Ketch in order to admit it. But I don't, so therefore I won't admit that. But you should read Scarlet Spider anyway, because it's good. So.
Speaking of the chat, I see Red Ryan in the chat. His pick for best of the year is Dial H, and that's also a very
A very good series.
Yeah, that's easily the best new thing to have come out of DC, no question. Absolutely, yeah. The best new series DC has launched this year. A fantastic reinvention of an old concept. It's an incredibly dark and blackly comedic, hilariously imaginative. Every issue brings something new to the table, and it's easily DC's best new launch of the year, no question.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff. Okay, let's move on then to our best trade or graphic novel picks. Chris McFeely.
Terribly obvious.
Unfortunately, don't need a lot of time on this one.
An awful lot of new graphic novels this year. There's a lot of them stacked up next
to me. You have a stack about 2 miles high there.
Yeah, the ones I've read plenty of books this year, except they're all books from last year that I've gone around to reading now. I'm presently reading John Byrne's Fantastic Four Omnibus, which I think was put out this year, and that'll let's say that because that's a great collection of well overdue stuff that's deserved to be collected in a prestige format like that for a long time now. Well done to IDW for finishing the collection of the classic G.I. Joes as well. That's excellent. I was very happy with that. I'm not a huge G.I. Joe fan, but I wanted to read the Marvel G.I. Joe series, and I bought all of those, and I very much enjoyed them. Oh, hey, you know, here's a real answer. I've just realized this is a much better answer than the thing I was going to talk about, because I've looked over to my right and spotted it sitting there. Hooray! I was going to give the vote to Saga Volume 1, because it's a fantastic series. $9.99, out right after the sixth issue was done, and published before the seventh issue, so anybody could grab it and then pick up the series right away. So few companies work their timing like that. It's just a fantastic offer. You can't say no to $10 for that level of quality.
Oh, yeah.
Just looked over and spotted is actually Avatar, The Last Airbender, The Promise.
Oh, yeah, I remember you talking about that.
Yeah.
The three-volume continuation of the Avatar television series, serving as something of a bridge between the sequel series, which launched this year, Legend of Korra, which is just a great little series that captures absolutely everything that was excellent about the cartoon, from its action to its comedy, to its handling of surprisingly deep themes for a children's cartoon, that it's actually able to take even just a little bit further than it was capable of doing in the cartoon, because it is working within the medium of comic, and they're able to... It's not like one of those comics that goes dark because it's a revival of an old property and it can because it's a comic. It's just able to use its medium to do things it couldn't do in the cartoon before while still playing to the same audience. Just great, and well worth a read for anyone from the who was a fan of the cartoon. I can't imagine there was anybody who was a fan of the cartoon who didn't read this, to be honest. And there's more coming next year that looks like it's going to answer some of the big dangling questions left over from the cartoon. Something I actively look forward to each time a new volume of it came out, and it led me to revisiting the cartoon this year, which was just as good as I remembered it. Korra was fantastic. Just a good year overall for that, as the only original content graphic novel that I read this year that wasn't a recollection of something else, that runs away with it as a prize. Absolutely. Avatar. Nice.
Chris Triplett.
I didn't read many either, so kind of by default that I'm picking Batman Earth 1. But also not because of default, because, like, I mean, seriously, I read Superman Earth 1, and it was dreadful. It was awful. I almost didn't get Batman Earth 1 because of it. Even though you got Jeff Johns doing the writing, you've got Gary Frank doing the art. Gary Frank, for God's sakes, doing a Batman story. But I bit the bullet. I got it, and I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, because it's really hard to reinvent the origin of a character like Batman. I mean, you got to think about it. There's basically the same origin that you can tell with it. I mean, what else can you do with that origin story? And I think they pulled it off. I think that it's a different take on it. He's like this asshole in it. You know, he's this jerk. Alfred isn't just his butler. Alfred is basically this soldier that, like, he's this trained killer guy. You know, it's a different take on Jim Gordon. Jim Gordon is like this scared cop. He's afraid of Gotham criminals coming after his daughter. It's just such a weird left turn for, you know, the Batman universe, and I'm looking forward to the next one too. It's, and you know, the Gary Frank art, like I said, it's really nice, and it's great to get a Batman costume too, where you can see his eyes. You know, yeah. you can because, you know, Gary Frank does great, you know, emotions in the faces, and then to actually see that in his face and see his eyes really helps the book.
I read it as well, actually. I did also really enjoy it. I can't describe it in any other way except to say it's Jeff Johnsy.
And Jeff Johnsy.
The last year or two, he's been pulled very thin ever since he became editor-in-chief or creative, whatever the hell it is his title is. You know, his Green Lantern's still been continuing on, but it is into this stage now where it feels like it's just event after event. His Justice League has been fine. His Shazam with Gary Frank has been really good. I have honestly enjoyed that. That's the thing I've enjoyed from him most this year.
I almost picked that Zero issue as a best. I mean, because
that's a great issue, actually.
If Shazam had its own book, that could have been a contender for best new series, too.
Yeah.
It was great.
But this does tick a lot of Jeff Johnsy boxes, you know, as an Earth 1. And it does go like, oh, look at that. We've got a child rapist villain for Batman. Yeah, that's contemporary. Yeah, like, I like reading about that. That's just super. But I did enjoy his Jim Gordon a lot. You know, I love Jim Gordon. Jim Gordon
I liked his Harvey Bullock, too. I didn't mention it.
Yeah.
It's a very different take on Harvey Bullock.
Yeah.
like where Batman Year One is just like the parallel stories of Gordon and Batman rising up against the corruption around them until their causes dovetail. This is the story of how Jim Gordon is a downtrodden man who's been broken by the system, who is emotionally, shall we say, or like psychologically saved from that by the arrival of the Batman in Gotham, and is inspired by him to rise up against the forces that have got him down. And I really enjoyed the take on Gordon, because whenever you get, and it's like you get to that point when it's like, that's Jim Gordon. That's my Jim Gordon. When he actually takes the stand and goes, and then all the other cops go, who's that guy? Because nobody knows who he is. He's kept his head down so far for so long. And you know how high that guy is going to rise going forward from here, because he's Jim Gordon. And it's the rise of Gordon and the fall of Bullock.
Yeah, it's so good. Like that last page where Bullock walks into the liquor store and he's looking at all the bottles, you know, covering up the whole page. Yeah, you feel it. You feel that this guy he's been through shit. You know, it hits you in the gut. It's really good. I mean, we didn't talk about it on the show much, but yeah, it's really good.
And it's like you say, that last page creatively as an original graphic novel of 120-ish pages, I think thereabouts, something like that. It's not written or paced so that it can be broken down into issues or anything. It's not afraid to use big full-page splashes or double-page splashes for cinematic oomph in a medium where, hey, it's okay to do that because this is a 120-page complete story and not a 20-page chunk you're plunking $4 down for that you're going to feel ripped off if you get a silent double-page spread. And if you've got a nice hardback graphic novel, it's a complete story in one, and you want to tell a cinematic story with tricks like that, it's actually okay, and it sells the story a lot better than when you get it in a monthly.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Nicole.
All right. This one, everyone's going to say, but that came out 2 years ago. No, this isn't. It's Last Stand of the Wreckers, the hardcover version. Not only do you get a great story, which pretty much made me like Transformers again, but you also get about the same size of story as you do extras. This book is put together very well. You got some backstories and some guest artists books. You got some bullets. Again, this is a story that had unknown characters that most people didn't care about, and by the end you fell in love with them by their heroics and their adventures. And so yeah, if you haven't read this story, you definitely got to, especially if you're a Transformers fan. Plus, like I said, you got all these really cool extras with the bullets, and that's why I chose this for this year. It came out in February this year. It's because of all the extras that came with it.
Nice.
So,
excellent.
There you go.
I would be hard pressed to name another series that got such a good treatment in collected format. Like that actually got that much. I mean, that's a collection that was essentially produced because people loved the miniseries so much that it earned the respect that it needed in order to be collected in that truly deluxe format with that amount of extras. Like, the existence of that book is a testament to the quality of that story and the love that story received. The complete rift hardback, not so much.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, excellent. There is almost 70 pages worth of extras in this thing. And it's beautifully done, and, great stuff. Great stuff.
Excellent. I have the softback, but man, the hardback would be great.
This hardback is beautiful. I had the soft cover and I gave it away because I'm like, I really don't need to, so I'll just
I don't double dip. Like, I don't rebuy. I know a lot of people do, but I've never been the kind of guy who rebuys trade paperback collections of things I own in single issues. So I didn't for Wreckers. And then when the hardcover was announced, I was like, well, I can't not buy that. You know, it got me to break my rule.
I don't normally do that either, but I had to buy, and it's what I wanted to pick, I guess last year, but it came out year before, which is the Unthinkable, the Taskmaster trade. In particular, because my shopkeeper was like, well, you know, it's out of print, and it's my last one. I was like, damn it.
Damn it.
So those are nice to have other people read. Anyway,
I've got the Dark Towers all in hardback, and I love the hardback version. So when this came out, I'm like, I've got to have this in hardback.
If you want to be a pusher, graphic novel collections of some of your favorite things are good to have.
Yeah, Yeah. So my pick
right here, suckers.
My pick's interesting because this was a response to an atheist prayer. which is several weeks ago on the show, we were talking about Emma Rios art, and I said, you know, what I really want to see is Emma Rios do Doctor Strange. And Chris McFeely, being the savvy salesman that he is like, well, do you know? Emma Rios did do Doctor Strange, and not only that, Greg Pak wrote it. And I'm like, I have to own this. And so I had my shop order it, and it is as excellent as I thought it would be. The art is absolutely amazing. You know, the story is great. It's a story basically of, you know, Doctor Strange's first meeting with the Ancient One, and him and Wong are both students, and him and this other girl go on a crazy adventure. It's just great, and the art is just as amazing as I thought it would be. So you should absolutely pick that up. We've been talking about how great Doctor Strange is and deserving of a book, and it should be drawn by Emma Rios.
I really need to read it, but it's sitting right here. I just have to get to it.
You really should, dude. You really should. It is great. It is Mordo.
I need to read it.
I mean, what more do you need? But Doctor Strange.
What are all their books I have to get through first? Not counting an omnibus.
Strange, not as the Sorcerer Supreme. So him and Wong basically as equals on a crazy adventure seeking artifacts. You know, it's something else. It really is. It's a lot of fun. So that's my pick for best.
I did tell you, didn't I, that Emma Rios also drew Mark Waid's Doctor Strange minis, right?
No. You might have skipped over mentioning that.
That's called Strange the Doctor is Out, but I think it's out of print.
Okay. Well, if it's out of print, I probably can't get it. So.
Well, just to let you know.
I'll check my shop and see if he happens to have it. So, all right. So there you go. I love when I ask for something and then it, like, I get it. You know?
It already exists.
Like, I'm not even going to have to wait on it. You know? It's like, it's there. It's like, just go get it.
It's nice to want things and then they actually happen.
Yes. Yes. That. So, all right. We are coming towards the end. We are charging towards the end of this. So, best writer, your pick, Chris McFeely.
Well, we're just treading old ground now at this stage, so I'll keep it simple. It's Kieran Gillen. Absolutely.
Yeah.
A writer who has just been on the absolute top of his game on Journey into Mystery this year, delivering, like, as I said, one of the most consistent books on the stands, making me fall in love with old characters all over again, new characters, new takes on old characters. He just really Journey into Mystery, honestly, it never put a foot wrong, and Gillen's assuredness of where he was taking that story is part of the reason. And of course, Journey into Mystery isn't all he's been doing. He has been doing a great turn on Uncanny X-Men as well, a little bit overshadowed by Wolverine and the X-Men and the sheer unrepentant goofery of Wolverine and the X-Men has made it a lot more fun, and Gillen has been somewhat saddled by writing the cast of X-Men characters who are supposed to be quite unlikable as a result of the position they have taken. But he did a great new twist on Mr. Sinister. He had a really good single issue that was told entirely from the perspective of a fragment of the Phalanx that definitely comes in as a runner-up as one of the best for the year. It's some great stuff.
That was good, Colossus. Yeah.
Did some great stuff with Colossus and Magic that had a really twisted and bleak ending on it. He's moved off to Iron Man now, which has been a little bit more scattershot. And I think that's he admits himself, is because he doesn't actually know where he's going with that one. He's just along for the ride as much as the characters are, which I'm still enjoying, but which I think needs to find a little bit more focus. And I'm so ready for Young Avengers in the new year. I mean, this is a man whose star has been on nothing but a rise all the way through this year.
This new series of next year, maybe? Young Avengers? Maybe.
I know, man. I was going to mention my best trade for next year is already going to be leaving Megalopolis. So, so just throw that out there. But But yeah, no.
Probably you find it a little strange I'm not voting for Jonathan Hickman. But while I've loved everything he's been doing this year, he has been on the downswing. Not in terms of quality, just in terms of what he's been doing. It's been all wrap up on Fantastic Four, which has had plenty of great issues. And JD named one of them as the best issue of the year, and I'd agree with him. It's one of the best, definitely. He's just been doing a lot of wrap up there, and like he's hit the bottom of his downswing, and it's like right back up there with the start of the Avengers. New Avengers starts next week. So on board for that. But just Gillen has just been pumping out the sheer level of consistency that every time I pick up the thing, I know I'm going for a good comic. I can't not give it to him. Karen Gillen takes it, absolutely.
Okay. Chris Triplett, is there any question?
Well, honorable mention is Vaughn for Saga, because Saga is so good. But we've talked Saga to death. But yeah, I mean, I think I like Spider-Man, so there's this guy that writes it, and I didn't send him any death threats, but I like him. Dan Slott, who writes Amazing Spider-Man. I mean, for God's sakes, he made me feel good about Doc Ock and him being the new Spider-Man. So, I mean, it's Dan Slott, Amazing Spider-Man. There's nothing else I can say. I enjoyed it. I'm continuing to enjoy it. I can't wait for Superior Spider-Man because I've got no clue what's going to happen next. And it's exciting. It's great to be excited for comics. And it's Dan Slott.
Yeah. Dan Slott is one of us. That's what it is about Dan Slott.
Totally.
First and foremost, a bigger fan of what he does than, and this is not a knock against other people in the industry, but I just mean he is, I don't know, I couldn't name any other writer who is as much of a fan of the properties he works with. And just the fact that he gets to write comics for a living than Dan Slott is. And it's the fact that you can feel his love for Spider-Man emanating off.
Dan Slott, to his apartment and you close your eyes and put your hand down and you're probably touching a piece of Spider-Man paraphernalia,
I mean, one fan of Spider-Man, but he loves to mess with him. He's his number one fan. He loves Spider-Man more than anybody else, but that doesn't mean he ain't going to mess with him. He ain't going to screw his life up because he loves him.
And I think that that's the trick about like a good writer and what usually doesn't happen. Like when you have someone that's a big fan of something and then they write it, usually like they're really tentative. Like they don't want to do crazy stuff, but Dan Slott is like the other side of that. He's like, I love this so much that I know where the boundaries are and I can play within that and keep it to the level of things that people are going to appreciate. Yeah, he's getting death threats, but who wouldn't? I mean,
as a character who as a writer who just loves Spider-Man and his history, Slott knows that the best Spider-Man stories are the ones that take Spidey to the absolute emotional extremes.
Yeah.
They're the ones that push Spidey into situations where his beliefs are called into question and his determination has to triumph over everything to just return to the root, that great power, great responsibility, and that will see him through. And Dan Slott understands that, and it's why, although he'll really, really put the character through the ringer, I mean, Dan Slott hasn't done anything to Spidey that put him through the ringer to the extent that the previous couple of years under Straczynski did.
Yeah.
You know, May's been shot dead. Oh, at no point has Dan Slott's Spider-Man got so depressed he had to start dressing in black again. Dan Slott's Spider-Man is about Peter Parker's triumph over moments like that, not his succumbing to them.
Right.
And that's what distinguishes, I think, Dan Slott's.
Yeah, like it wasn't this year, I don't think, but like the story where Jonah's wife died. You thought that he would have turned that into, oh, God, I can't do this anymore. I killed someone. And he turned it into a positive. No one else died.
Yeah, like,
still Slott's best.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I mean, because what did he do? He took more responsibility. You know, and that there's that thing about Slott. It's like he understands that with great power there almost comes great responsibility. So Spider-Man's response to that would be to take even more responsibility. Yeah.
Because he takes on more responsibility, he's got to be better. He's got to make himself better so that he has the power to take on these responsibilities. It's the responsibilities that define Spider-Man, not the power.
Right.
And that's what Dan Slott gets. And that's the massacre story that I was talking about earlier, where Spidey has an answer for everything. His sheer determination fights through. And this is not from this year, but it is still the best Slott Spidey.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean... he's still one of my favorite writers. The way I always describe Dan Slott is when I discovered him on She-Hulk was that he was the one writer who was willing to be fun when fun was being treated as a dirty word in comics.
Yeah.
And that's still true. Although fun is a far, far more widespread thing now with many more writers actually writing stories in which the characters get to enjoy their lives and what they're doing. Dan Slott was still the guy for me that stood up in a sea of murk and death and grey and six issues written for the trade and said, MODOK is trying to freeze the atmosphere with a cryo gun powered by Blizzard in this issue of She-Hulk.
That's awesome. Nicole.
Okay, I don't know what happened to my video. We had a little power surge right there, so my video went down. Sorry.
No problem.
My favorite this year is going to be James Roberts for Transformers More Than Meets the Eye.
Oh, God, yes.
That's the reason why I'm saying this. Who would have thought Transformers would be on our must-read list? And each time this comic book comes out, we have to decide whether we're going to review it or not, or if we should spend so much time on a certain comic. Now, that's amazing for one individual to turn around a whole industry's views on Transformers comics. Don't get me wrong. John Barber's doing a great job on his, but James Roberts, I don't know. He's just taken off with the series.
My God, he writes a character that's nothing but an eyeball and makes him interesting. I'm talking about Whirl. How does he do that?
How do you get so much motion out of a light?
How do you get so much emotion out of a flashlight?
Marvel and DC, if they're paying attention, should really be sniffing around.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying I want them to poach him away from Transformers or anything, but like he is really find of the year kind of territory as far as the comic book industry should be concerned to be doing this amount of stuff. And, you know, I don't know, James. Maybe he doesn't have any interest in writing Spider-Man or the X-Men or Batman or whatever. Maybe he legitimately does just want to write Transformers. I don't know. I mean,
that would be great.
The thing is with James Roberts, with his writing now, it's not. We're not saying it's good for a Transformers comic. It's good for a comic.
It's good stuff. I mean, I've said it all year. I mean, More Than Meets the Eye is probably one of the best team books that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I saw another podcast this year in their year in review vote it as their most pleasant surprise. You know, as readers who are not, some of them read the Transformers comics regularly, but just like you said, it's the industry is sitting up and paying attention to this. It's not just Transformers fans going, oh, it's great to have a brilliant Transformers movie. We are seeing non-Transformers sites actively cast their attention on this book because of the buzz and because of the quality of work that are being put out of it. And you're an outsider looking in. You didn't read Last Stand of the Wreckers or whatever. You're hearing that, a new Transformers book, which is going to be about a premise that has nothing to do with the traditional setup of Transformers, starring characters that you've never heard of, written by an ascended fan. That's not the sort of like pitch to sell the outsider on this comic. But every single one of those things has been the absolute reason for the book's success. And it's like Roberts, I think I said this last week, if he wasn't writing Transformers, he'd be held up as the next big thing.
Oh, yeah.
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 I agree. I mean, like I said, who thought we would be wanting to read Transformers? I remember I used to read Transformers comics, and it was like, I'm doing this because I'm a fan of Transformers, but I'd rather go watch the cartoons. Or now the comics is my mainstream Transformers fun.
Yeah.
You know?
True.
Yeah.
So good.
Excellent.
Yeah, who would have thought someone could turn the whole industry around?
Yeah, I know.
In just a matter of like the first three issues of the series this year.
Oh yeah. So my pick. Wow. Last year, you know, we talked about this person and basically said that, you know, they were a failure. They were, you know, not worth reading. I think I would refer to them as...
Why don't you kick him while he's down, Jimmy, for God's sake?
Yeah, you know, I think I referred to him as a hipster, you know, didn't have any interest whatsoever. This year, however, what a difference a year makes. Matt Fraction has really established himself as a really great writer. I mean, he's really put his stamp on a lot of good things. And one of those in particular has been Hawkeye. You know, the six issues of Hawkeye that I've read so far have been great. So he's my pick for best writer. You know, and like I said, I didn't pick Hawkeye for the best book, but I did pick Fraction as the better writer. And again, because I think he's... Something happened. I don't know if my attitude changed or he got better, but something happened this past year. And he's just turned it around. I mean, a complete 180. And, man.
And it's Fantastic Four, and if is...
Yeah. Fantastic Four is going to be strong.
Go through the absolutely dreadful Fear itself. And I don't remember if any of you guys read it or not, but a not bad... After a really very, very, very good start, but what descended into a not awful, but amazingly meh, unremarkable run on Thor. Like, the least interesting run on Thor in 15 years. To go from
yeah,
that...
I remember Thor being so good at the beginning. Thor at the beginning was very good, and then to bottom of the pile. You know?
Yeah.
Well, that was more of the ones I moved it up to the top of the pile so I could get it out of the way and then carry on.
Yeah.
And then 1 week it was like I read More Than Meets the Eye first, and I was like, I got to stop reading More Than Meets the Eye first.
Yeah. But no, man. Fraction.
His Hawkeye and his FF and his Fantastic Four as well. Particularly FF, I must say, as it's just got things rolling a little faster than Fantastic Four has. I think FF has definitely jumped that to take its position as my favorite of the two so far. Great second issue on FF. He's the other Matt Fraction came back. He's turned into a writer to watch next year.
Yeah. He's fun. He's great.
Hawkeye.
Just like Matt. Like MASH. You know, Hawkeye.
Hawkeye.
I will be so disappointed if that joke does not make it into either a Black Widow Hawkeye film or the next Avengers film, because it should be, because that's just a damn good joke. And it's one that's audible. It's like you have to hear it with the New York accent, or else it doesn't make a lot of sense, so I love it.
Hawkeye.
You know, it's Hawkeye. You know, like the show. You know, Hawkeye. Okay. Best artist. This is it. This is our last.
Jump on there, JD. Just a word from the chat again. There is we've got votes for James Roberts agreeing with us there for best writer. Red Ryan plumps for Grant Morrison as well, who we probably should give an honorable mention.
I would say that his action has been great, and maybe not as strong as his Batman run, just because it's been shorter. Yeah.
Grant Morrison is great, but when I think of best writer, I kind of think of. Like a surprise, almost.
Oh,
you know?
In some ways, yeah. I mean, it depends on how you think about it, but yeah.
I mean, his action is still definitely my favorite of the original launch New 52 books. Style H has taken over it as, like, my favorite DC book. Definitely, like, that last issue of action was an explosion of all the potential the series has held. And he's also been doing Happy, which has been a great little miniseries as well.
That was in, like, my top... four or five of the year.
Not wrapped up yet, otherwise I would have ranked it higher, but that's...
I'm going to miss him on superhero comics, because I don't buy other stuff that much.
Yeah. And I want to see Gail Simone back on this list next year, so let's hope that happens next year.
Yeah.
So, excellent. Good picks there, chat. So, all right, here we go. Last category. We're almost done here, folks. It's been a marathon show, but that's okay. It's end of the year.
End of the year.
It's our big celebration. Yeah,
it's all right. It's allowed. I have drink.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
I know. I'm out now. I'm like, damn.
Okay, best artist, Chris McFeely, your pick, sir.
Well, this will just be a short one. Again, like with Gillen for best writer, we're just retreading Ground here because it's Fiona Staples on Saga.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a one-woman tour de force.
Man, she's doing everything on that book, right?
Inking, colors, she even does the lettering for Hazel herself by hand. The only thing that is not hers is the lettering, the actual speech bubbles. A beautiful, simple, very, very straight, simple, crisp, direct line art that just creates these this amazingly distinctive and unique-looking characters. Beautiful men and women. I don't mean like the beautiful, like the art is beautiful. Beautiful, like I mean these physical beings are very beautiful, attractive creatures as well.
It is very varied too. Not the same person looks.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of individuality in it.
I know what it is about, like Alana's like facial profile. But anytime she's on the page, I'm always just drawn to just looking at her and just studying the structure of her. I don't know, but if we had to pick best new character out of the year, I think I'd be very drawn to Alana. There's a lot going on there with that character, and artistically is a huge part of it as well. I just like, it's going to sound kind of perfect, but I really just like looking at her, you know? Just
okay.
I understand.
We've learned something about Chris McFeely.
I understand where he's going with
like
it.
Late night, the flashlight, just looking.
Just like the last issue when she's reading that book, you know, or the cover where she's on the book. Yeah, the cover that I thought it was really well done. Yeah.
Yeah, of that fantastic image. That's the kind of image I wanted to post.
Yes.
I'm blowing bubblegum and reading the book with one hand. Like, I love that image.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Emotion out of robot TV people.
Yes.
Robot TV people that have emotion. Oh, my God.
Robot TV headed taking a shit.
I love those days, like whenever he goes insane, like his screen just goes to static, and then he just goes for you. Like,
yeah.
It's a one woman show. It's just a tour de force. I don't think anybody has even come close. I honestly couldn't name a single other book this year where I don't think there's been a single book this year that I have followed an artist onto, if you know what I mean. Now, I was always happy to see Richard Elson pop up on Spidey and Journey into Mystery this year, because I've been a big fan of his since his Sonic the Hedgehog days here in the UK, so he gets an honorable mention. But there's no artist I've followed around this year, but there's no artist that I've been, I think, as happy to just sit back and enjoy the work of as Fiona Staples.
Mm. Excellent. Chris Triplett.
Yeah, McFeely. My pick. She was going to be all of our picks anyway because she's so awesome. But like, I'll mention to her again. And if I can't pick her, then yeah, it's got to be Greg Capullo because I mean, has there really ever been a guy that's like perfect for Batman? I mean, now, yeah. I mean, he can go like, and you can like look at the most recent issues and the stuff with the Joker. I mean. His face is so disgusting, but you can't look away from it either.
Yep.
Because it's so detailed. But like, even going back to that issue I was just talking about, his best issue, the everything, how his costume, it shreds, and as it shreds, his sanity is going with it. The eyeball, you know, the decrepit parents that he finds that dies, you know, and turns into owls and all. He's such a great artist, and he works on flashy, beautiful Todd McFarlane-esque art, but he also has that just gnarly look, too. He can do it both, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's really diverse and really interesting. I mean, I was thinking about art in, you know, like in terms of the dimension. It is a two-dimensional medium, you know, displaying a three-dimensional world. And he has this interesting play with, like, the thickness and texture of things that come out on the page that I just absolutely love. And I think that is typified in that Labyrinth issue, but in others as well, you know.
Yeah, like I said, like, you know, the newest issues with the Joker and all that stuff, it's still there. Like, he really hasn't had, like, an off day when he's been doing Batman. I mean, yeah. There hasn't been an off issue. It continues to be great.
Excellent. Nicole?
Okay, my nomination is actually a team effort of the artist and the colorist, because if they didn't work together, it would not work in the comic book, and that's for Dan Schoing and Louis Antonio Delgado on Ghostbusters, because each time you read a comic and you see the coloring and the details of the ghosts in it, it just pops out at you. like, it's going to come off the page and get you. And I just think that's amazing that each month it's just steady, great, fun work. And like I said, the coloring in the issues is what really makes it, especially when you got the ghosts. Love it. Love it.
So, I don't think I've seen any of their work at all.
Yeah, I don't think so. But...
The art's kind of cartoonish, but it's still really amazing when they get to the ghosts and they use like these vibrant colors, a lot, kind of like almost neon and electric colors. It's just really well done. So
nice.
And I can't wait for next month because they did a teaser cover and it's got Slimer on it and it looks amazing.
Awesome.
What a tease for January.
So my pick is, again, you know, I have to go with something that a close second is going to be, again, you know, like Emeritus, just because, I mean, like I said, I picked the Doctor Strange book just because of, like, her, and I've really, you know, loved a lot of the work. I didn't mention earlier, but she's done, like, she did a couple issues of Captain Marvel as well, and those were great, so...
I'll tell you, her presence for those few issues kept me on that book longer than I would have been just because she drew them. So I guess that's the closest I got to following an artist into anything this year.
Yeah. But I have to give it to David Asia, who's been working on Hawkeye again. I always appreciate an artist that can work outside of the norms of the medium, you know, and really doing something different than what everybody else is doing. And David is totally that. You know, he talked about this issue 6 that just came out of Hawkeye as being his attempt to break every single rule of comic book art, mm-hmm. and he totally
yeah,
did.
I remember.
And he totally did that. I mean, it is very unconventional, outside the box. You know, it's very... You know, it's just not what you expect to see out of a comic, and yet it conveys great story and emotion and is just as fun as the writing is for it. The art really sells that as well. And so if you're looking for a book that just looks different, feels different, you know, check out the art at least on Hawkeye, because, man, it's great. Great stuff.
I mean, we are now... We're kind of in a time when... particularly with DC, there is a bit of a holding back on true, aside from what Freddie Williams keeps calling it, J.H. Williams is doing on Batwoman when he does it. There is kind of a bit of a muzzle on experimentation and creativity. DC have been very much trying to get the books out on time, convince us that this is a shared universe. Everything has been working within a kind of, not a house style, that's going too far, but you know what I'm saying. There's not much in the way of exploration or experiment.
I'd use the term homogenous.
Yeah, that's probably slightly more insulting than house style, but probably. <more than that.
laughs> I mean, it may be that I am being on the edge of insulting, but I think I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, everything that's coming out of DC is of a particular art style that you would expect to see, like, out of comic. So, you know, in a very sort of 90s sort of way, where everything, you know, had, like, that same kind of look, that's what's coming out of DC, but, you know,
but
Marvel.
It is Marvel right
oh,
now.
Oh, man.
Who are really... It's not like it's a mad period of experimentation or anything. We're not back... like in 2000, whenever everything is being thrown against the wall and seeing what sticks, you know, things are still being played a little bit safer. But I mean, honestly, some of the honorable mentions that ought to go to this year are the things that have started with Marvel now, which is why they're only a few issues old. But Jerome Pena's Avengers, Asad Rimas.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh my god, I mean, these are some of the best looking things. And they're so non-standard, like painterly, unusual, just non-standard looking comics. And Ahaz Hawkeye is the same sort of thing, you know? Or Stephanie Hans's last issue of Journey into Mystery, again, to go back to it, is an entirely painted issue, like by the artist who'd done all the covers of that series. Another gorgeous thing. And even something as simple as Ramos's Spider-Man, with the vastly more, like, cartoonish, expressive, elongated things. Or I see it's been announced that Felipe Andrade is going to be coming on as the new artist for Captain Marvel now. I mean, at least I guess Dexter Soy, I think we all pretty much agreed, was a bad match for what that book was trying to do. But it was non-standard. You know, it wasn't... Yeah. It wasn't house style homogenous or anything, and Andrade is a bit more afield again. It's even more sort of distorted than someone like Ramos is, that Latin American cartoonish style. You know, Marvel is the one that is doing the really experimental things like that. Even Image, who, you know, I mean, we're not doing Publisher of the Year, but I think, to be honest, if Image, that's the title Image really deserves this year.
Oh yeah,
for all of the the sheer quantity of brand new ideas that they are bringing to the table over at Image. And I mean, we haven't seen any truly like unusual or outstanding or uncommon art out of that series. We've seen some fantastic art, but Marvel is the one that really seems to be putting a lot more experimentation and is selling their books on the basis of the creators that are working on them, which is something DC is not doing at all now, because they don't seem to be able to get their creators to put books out, short of Snyder and Morrison and Johns.
Now, not to completely crack DC's art, one thing I was going to say real quick, I just remembered as an honorable mention, Yannick Paquette's Swamp Thing was gorgeous.
Yes.
And that when you talk about experimentation, I think that's where DC had an artist that did do experimentation, because every single piece of artwork that that was done for Swamp Thing looked like it could have been like a painting. You know, when you talk about J.H. Williams, it was the next thing I could imagine towards J.H. Williams that DC was doing this year.
Absolutely. But you know what? That's also a really good example then, and Williams is as well, of how DC took that and then homogenized it by getting all the guys who filled in on Swamp Thing to do the same thing Paquette was doing with the branches, the panel borders. And they got Amy Reeder and, what's the other artist's name? Crap, I forget the name of the guy who filled in after Reeder left before Williams came back. They were doing all the same things Williams was doing, but just not as good as he did with the unusual page layouts and everything. They just took an artist's voice and made it the voice of the book, not the voice of the creator working on the book, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Marvel does seem, at the minute with Marvel now, they're more about selling the books with the creators as well as the name, whereas short of a small group of high-profile names, DC is just selling the books, trying to sell the books based on who they are and the character and the universe that they're in, rather than the unique merits of the books themselves. And we're seeing a lot of cancellations coming out of it as a result of things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, but, and that's kind of an interesting way that we've kind of can take it, you know, this conversation into that world, because I do, you know, I think a good cap on this is that, man, you know, for a year in which DC should have totally dominated, you know, and had the potential to, and it's not that they're not doing well some ways in terms of sales, but man, you know, Marvel in terms, if you're just talking the two, has really been willing to go there and try stuff. And, you know, this Marvel Now, like you said, has been all about, you know, creator combinations and
it's mostly been about Marvel Now, you know, it's like so much of this year has been Avengers versus X-Men. And with Marvel, it's truly been the books that have weaved through the cracks of that have been the things that have been most worth paying attention to. Wade's Daredevil, Gage's Avengers Academy, Journey into Mystery, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that have been just slightly to the left of where the spotlight has shown. Ruckus Punisher. And now as we move into Marvel Now, it really does seem like... Yeah, there's one we haven't mentioned up all the night, which really should have got a nod at something. It does seem like with Marvel Now, we are moving into a period where Marvel are willing to get a little bit more experimental. And this is not to say that DC was not experimental with the launch of the New 52. The sad thing is just that, I'm not going to deny it, that most whenever they tried something unusual like Deathstroke or Captain Atom or Voodoo or Grifter, I just went, really? Instead of giving it a shake or patting them on the head for an attempt at doing something new, I went, really? But then I suppose it's not new, is it? It's just wheeling out an old brand. Similar, DC is determined to anything new that happens, whether it's an anthology or whatever, they're determined to just paste an old name on it, from GI Combat to All-Star Western to whatever. Don't put a new name on anything, for goodness sake. I mean, yeah, okay, I mean, the closest thing Marvel's got to new is Fearless Defenders, which really seems to just be Daughter of the Dragons merged with the Defenders by any other name. And I grant you, my reaction to their attempt to do a Morbius ongoing series is much the same as, really?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah.
But then you look at things like FF, which is launching blind with basically riding on the fact that there's the connection is there used to be a book, there used to be two Fantastic Four titles, so there's still two Fantastic Four titles, but this has nothing to do with that one, and it's really selling itself on the creators who are working on it and the quirky mixture of characters. As a for instance, you know, and then you look at X-Men Legacy, which is that's a Legion solo book. So I kind of wish you'd sell it a little more honestly and not call it X-Men Legacy when it's not an X-Men book; it's a Legion book. But that's a thing that I'm amazed even exists. You know, and I don't really. I go, that's interesting. You know, but maybe I'm just a bit more forgiving of Marvel because I'm more of a Marvel fan than DC fan. I don't deny that that's a possibility, but it does feel to me just like that Marvel are being a little more experimenting, and they are being a little more daring and forthright with the creators they're putting on these things than DC have. We're short of a few books over at DC. So many of the non-A-list New 52 stuff has slumped back to pre-relaunch levels of interest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's definitely been an interesting year. You know, like I said, a lot of twists and turns going on over at DC. You know, and now with Marvel now just now launching. So we'll be talking about where that ended up probably next year. You know, this time next year, we'll be talking about where that ended up. So a lot of stuff to look forward to.
To reiterate, though, Image really should take it. Yeah. Although we haven't talked about an awful lot of Image books on this thing. Like the Image books we have talked about are books that are well worth your time to check out. There are so many that you could list off. They're just brand new minis and brand new ongoings that are just doing crazy different things. If you're looking, if you're out there and you're feeling a little bored, if you're feeling a little bored and you're not seeing anything new out of Marvel now that interests you, and the New 52 has you have no interest in it anymore, go look at something from Image. Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff to choose from, and you're about to find something that takes your interest. If Saga's not for you, try Manhattan Project, which is something else we should have mentioned this year.
Who is Jake Ellis is in trade? That that's been really good. The Where Is Jake Ellis just started, so
Mind the Gap. Peter Panzerfaust, Hoax Hunters, Pigs. There's The Walking Dead continues to be put out. Hackslash continues to be put out. Check out Revival, an absolutely fantastic new horror miniseries from Image as well. If you're looking for something a little spooky and nasty, there's so much going on there. And I feel bad that we don't talk about a lot of their books as much as we could, because this year, I think, was truly the year, even though they'd had a lot of successes with things like Walking Dead and Morning Glories and Chew in the last couple of years, this year, I think, was the year where Image finally shook off their reputation to the industry and the fandom at large as the TNA company that failed at the end of the 90s and actually really stepped up its game and stepped into the ring again as the company of the big four or five, if you want to count Marvel, Image, DC, Dark Horse, and IDW, the prestige ones in your previews, that is really doing like the most inventive and imaginative new stuff that's coming out right now.
Yep. Absolutely. Awesome. Well, there you go, everybody. That's our best of 2012. Check out all of that stuff. Go buy it. Go to your local comic shop and buy it all right now. Or tomorrow.
I do, man. Pretty much.
That's a lot of money.
It might be a lot of money. There's some overlap there. You'd be okay. So there you go. So great. I want to say thank you to all three of my co-hosts here on the show who have tirelessly been here almost every week.
Almost.
And, but you know, it is a labor of love on our part. I mean, obviously we love comics, but you know, we don't get paid for this. We don't get money for this. You know, we buy our own books. At least I don't think Chris McFeely gets stuff free. He may thumb stuff.
No, I buy my books.
So he buys his books. So, you know, so this is truly like a labor of love for us, and we absolutely enjoy it. We enjoy bringing it to you every week. And, you know, we'll do it for as long as I guess we want to, even if you're not listening. But we know you are, and we appreciate it. So, and you should tell your friends about our show. because we would like to have more listeners than Superhero Time.
It's a race.
Our show has Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett, and
but you don't have, like, we apologize for that, and you shouldn't hold it.
All right. So, we definitely have more breasts on this show than Superhero Time, so that may be of an advantage to you. I don't know. Whatever it is,
that's, but
you
should just on the guys.
Yeah. So, whatever. I'm shameless at this point. I want to beat Superhero Time. Because even though I am on that show, I take a lot of shit for the fact that they get more people listening to their show than this one. So, we would appreciate it if you would tell people at your shop about it. And if you want a shout out or something for your shop, let us know. I'm shameless.
We respect that you have a lot of choice.
Right.
Your comic book podcast.
There's a
ton. You don't have no choice for Superhero Time. You got to listen to that if you want to hear about Toku. But you got a choice if you want to listen to people talk about comics. So thank you for picking us when there are lots of other things that you could be listening to.
That is very true. I mean, if you want to listen to a Toku podcast, you've got Superhero Time. And
that's about it.
So, yeah.
For everyone that listened to us today, stayed with us in the chat, you guys are awesome.
Yeah, so, absolutely. And see, we do a live show, so. Yeah. But anyway, so again, but especially, again, thank you guys. I mean, I could not do this show without all of you, or most of you, or at least at one time. I prefer to have two of you at any one time, but I love having all of you here, and I appreciate your dedication.
Hey, and thanks to anyone who guested when anyone of us weren't here.
Yes, absolutely. Grufflock. We had on. We had Tiny was on. Ken, Mugino Ken from Superhero Time was on. So, absolutely.
Guests this year. I want to see more guests.
Several less episodes this year if people hadn't been willing to step up and fill in for one of us wasters who had to go off and do something real.
I mean, we have lives, we have stuff, but yeah. And if there's someone that you want, to be on the show, I know there's a couple of people that I have in mind, so when we need to fill in, we'll try to get them on. But
JD, if I wanted Brian Kilby to be a guest, is that possible? I don't think that's possible, is it?
Brian Kilby. The name sounds familiar.
Bell.
I mean, I think I've heard of him. I don't know what he knows.
I think I've heard of him before. I don't know if we could get him as a guest.
I think
he's like a little bit hard to get a hold of now.
I don't know. Well, I mean, I'm not sure. Does he really know anything about comics?
He knows that they're published.
I mean, maybe he reads them, but I don't know that he knows anything about them.
I think
them.
He saw the trailer for Amazing Spider-Man once.
I think, yeah. he might have seen a comic book movie, I guess. So. I don't know. I'll have to think about that one.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I have a certain, I have a certain level of quality that I want to keep. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, sure. Love to be on, but I would definitely have to trade him out for you. I don't know if I want you and Brian on the same show.
The podcast might explode.
Yeah, we might implode the universe or something. Yep. We would create some sort of horrifying pocket universe with saved heroes in it, But anyway, thanks again, everybody. Thanks to all our listeners. Thanks to Brian for letting us have a little piece of his web space to do this show every week. And again, thank you to my crew for showing up and being here and helping me do this show, because it would be really boring if it was just me. So. So with that said, please go to the website, fanboyversus.com or tfradio.net. Listen to us live each Sunday, tfradio.net/live. Check us out on Twitter @fanboyvs. So for myself, for the crew, we hope you have a happy new year, and be
happy
safe and be smart.
Happy new year.
When you're out enjoying your new year. Have a fun, but have a safe holiday. Because we definitely want you listening into the new year. So that's it. That's all for Fanboy Versus. Thanks for tuning in. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy Versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.